Committee of the Whole will come to order. Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a quick reminder, folks, people, lobbyists and folks in the out in the lobby have been having trouble hearing us, so just a friendly reminder to keep the microphone close to your mouth when either looking one way or the other, or if you look down to try to read something, just sort of bring the microphone down and follow it, have it follow you. Yeah, just keep that in mind. Thanks.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Do we need reading of the bill?
Yes, I thought maybe you had an announcement. Thank you. Okay. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 7. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution 007 from Representative Burkhart, a joint resolution to the United States Secretary of Agriculture and the Chief of the United States Forest Service expressing support for the timely and scheduled completion of rare element resources. Bear Lodge Critical Rare Earth Project Environmental Impact Study. Madam Chairman, Committee 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to who is referred House Joint Bill Number 7, Bear Lodge Project, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Edmonds, Gay, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Summers, and Walters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Lockhart? Representative Kasparic.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint 7 do pass.
Representative Burkhart.
I further move the House Standing Committee Amendment 1, and I will turn the discussion of the bill and the amendment over to the good representative. Thank you.
Third time's a charm. Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, before you is House Joint Resolution 7 on the Bear Lodge Project. And I think I'll just take care of the Standing Committee Amendment right now. In the original bill, there was mention in there of cooperating agencies. And we really don't want to include those in this joint resolution. Those people have been great to work with, and that was kind of just being a little overzealous on what we were doing. So the Standing Committee Amendment removes cooperating agencies from everywhere they're found in the bill. And if there's no discussion, I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, in your boxes you'll find a handout. It is in color, large blue line across the top. It talks about the project and also in there as a refresher, to what rare earths are and to help understand the conversation is a nice copy of the periodic table of elements, suitable for framing, I think. It's brightly colored. And so a little bit of background. Rare earths are on the periodic chart. If you look at the bottom of that chart, if you find it in the handout, those are the elements called lanthanides. And when I was in school, they were considered a scientific curiosity. I remember having a box of yttrium on the shelf, and we did a lot of things with it, and nothing worked. I won't go into what we did with the stuff. But anyway, over the years, these elements have become highly critical to our way of life. If you look through that handout, you can see what is used in your cell phone. Also used in your laptop computers. Numerous of cars of the hybrid type use large amounts of these. Wind turbines use 750 pounds of one of these elements. And that, while they're called rare earths elements, they are fairly common in the Earth's crust, but what really is rare are concentrated deposits that are mineable. And Wyoming has one of those deposits, probably one of the three best in the world. This puts Wyoming on the world stage to contribute these materials to actually a world economy, not just Wyoming. The elements currently are controlled, probably 90% of the supply, by a company on the Pacific Rim, who controls the market, who controls the price, who controls the availability. One of our major auto manufacturers wanted to do some research in these elements, and to get access to it was required to move their entire research facility to that country, which they did. So that's the importance of these. That country has described these materials as the petroleum of the 21st century. For Wyoming, continuing this project means jobs. We can already handle the severance taxes. They're already in statute, have been in statute for quite a while. These will also help provide a technological base to the state. Our great university is already working to develop research and value-added products. And the ultimate goal is that what leaves here is not raw materials but a finished product. And I think that's just enhancing our value-added structure in the state. With that, I'll go through the resolution with you. This project is in the northeast corner of the state, has been ongoing for a while, started mostly when I started as a freshman in 2010. While we were once largely self-sufficient on these materials, now we rely on imported materials. The Department of Energy, Department of Defense have issued approximately 27 different studies on these materials and their importance to the United States from a security standpoint especially. And if you want to know what's in there, I've read numerous of these reports. So the project started quite a while ago. It has the materials in it that are in highest demand and most susceptible to disruption in a geopolitical sense. These are also considered critical materials to national defense. I think some of you have seen the country's latest strike fighter that appears, if you've watched videos, to almost be able to travel sideways. That is due to use of rare earth materials in its production, which some I could tell you and others I really can't tell you how they're used. The company that is developing this project, Rare Element Resources, has also been invited to join the United States Critical Materials Institute, and is only one of seven private sector companies to do that, have that invitation. But the current status is they've actually laid off people because they can't get their environmental impact statements done. And that company also has not relied on any governmental loan guarantees or money. It's all completely privately funded, which is great for the state. We sit in here a lot and talk about how we want to fund entrepreneurship, and these people are doing it on their own. They haven't come to us asking for money. They were originally planning to commission their project in the fourth quarter of 2016, and have been waiting on a draft environmental impact statement from the United States Forest Service since then. So what this resolution does is asks the U.S. Department of Agriculture and U.S. Forestry Service to get with the program, so to speak, do what they've said they'd do, and issue that environmental impact statement. They're not asking for anything other than to follow the law. They aren't asking for special consideration. All they wanted is finalized, and those agencies promised that would be available in 2014, which it was not, and that they would have a record of decision by the fourth quarter of this year, which they may not. All of this asks is that those two government agencies do what they said they would do, what they promised to do in writing, and with that, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for House Joint Resolution 7, this is another one of those commodities in Wyoming where if we want to diversify our economy, here we go. The issue is it's located on federal lands again, and what we will do after many, many years of studies and delays and lawsuits by various groups, this project will be permitted at some point, and it will go into production, but the issue is it's missing its market opportunity. You know, these prices have gone up. Now they're on their way back down. And this, again, is one of those projects that hasn't asked for one penny from the state of Wyoming. They're doing this all themselves. They raised the capital to do this. Frankly, they could be in production probably by 2016 if they had all the go-aheads on this. So it's just a shame that a project like this, that's new technology, rocket science type technology, can't get going in Wyoming because of the delays that are caused. After they finally get all their permits, they're going to do the same thing then that they would do now if they could get the permits right now today. It's not going to save the environment. It's not going to be any more impact on the environment. It'll be exactly the same. So on and for the resolution, and we need to support projects like this in Wyoming.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not opposed to this resolution, but I think we need to understand that there are other things going on in the United States that relate to this. There's a project in California, Mountain Pass, California. It's being managed by the Molycorp Corporation. You can respond. I'll keep going. I realize what I just did. There is, in a state that has the bear as its symbol, a corporation. And this corporation in a small rural area has a very large mine that has actually been in operation originally back in the 1980s. They had to shut down for quite some time. The byproducts of these rare earth mines are fairly toxic and radioactive. They had a couple of very significant water spills in the nature. One was 600,000 gallons. I believe the other was 300,000 gallons. The operation was shut down until 2012 so they could correct the problems and recommence mining, which they have done. And they intend to be fully operational anytime and be producing approximately 20,000 metric tons a year of rare earths, which is more than the project that is being proposed here in Wyoming. What I'm leading to is the real issue with these kind of mines is water. And I consider water to be Wyoming's most valuable resource. And there is a high potential for contamination of water sources related to this mine. So I will just consider that information I have given to the body. Thank you very much.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The Minerals Committee has been following this project for a number of years, and I think there's a couple of key things. This one is coming to Wyoming on somebody else's chip, the opportunity to have a value-added enterprise in our state, and particularly in the really far northeast part of our state, is excellent. This company has the kind of research and has proven themselves to meet all of the questions that have been asked by the Minerals Committee as they're going through the developmental stage. I would urge your support of this House resolution because it may be the thing that'll trip it over. Now, as far as California, we heard those same stories when we were in the Minerals Committee on the status of rare earth production in the state of, or in the United States. We need this in our state, and the nation needs it, and so we should be helping them, so I urge your support.
Representative Viagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll tell you what, folks, this is about as refreshing a company as I've heard. They're here not asking for anything and just doing it because it's a business venture. Man, that makes you want to support them even more. But I'm wondering, this resolution is very good, but has there been some other things done to help working with our congressional folks to not only move you know, get this push that we're putting here, but also with them, just interested in how it's all sitting, and what help we've had from our congressional folks to help get this things like this moved along. Thank you.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I stand in favor of this rare earth mine, but the resolution has me confused. On page 5, section 3, we ask this legislative body encourages the Secretary of Agriculture and the Chief of the United States Forest Service to promptly identify and implement the proper steps to accelerate and streamline the environmental impact statement of the Bear Lodge project. Are we in the business of doing that? Does this happen a lot? Maybe the bringer of the resolution could answer that question. Have we done this for other projects? Thank you.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll answer the last question first. We've not had a project like this that I can remember being here. However, during the last session, I think some of you remember, we passed a resolution encouraging a federal agency to complete a project, really a road around Jackson Lake for bicycling. And that, and we've had some bicycle bills this session. They've completed a lot of that, and the indications are that that joint resolution may be of an impetus to them to get that project going. In fact, you'll see something mentioned that on the budget. We'll talk about that when we talk about the budget. But that helped push that along a little bit and get that got that off of dead center. And that, so these things do work. As for our congressional support, they are on board with this. There have been conversations with them and that. And this is just to show that the voice of this body and hopefully the other one is important. We value the project and want it to be heard. As to the issue of byproducts, the mine to the in the state to the west of us, the spill happened quite a few years ago. They're working to clean it up. They're dealing with that state's environmental process and that. The rare element resource people, they've patented a new separation process that actually would make it possible for them to go back into that mine in that western state and actually mine their tailing piles and extract minerals out of those also. The radioactive issue, the ones in the Bear Lodge area are not as radioactive in what small amounts they'll take out of there. They actually already have a customer for and that. And I know they're giving a lot of attention and detail to the environmental issues of that project, which we all want them to do. And one of the other byproducts out of that, I believe, well, never mind. It's a valuable material that all of us would like to have, but they've asked me not to indicate how much they have that they also extract out of there. So most of us are wearing some of it.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In answer to the good representative's question about the environmental impact statement, anytime you involve federal funds or federal lands, it's BINEPA, and I can't remember the acronym for that. You can go ahead and search for it on your internet. But because of NEPA, there has to have an environmental impact statement that needs to be done, and that's anytime you involve federal monies or federal lands. Again, when you're working with the feds, that kind of thing has to happen. Too bad it wasn't Wyoming land, but that's the answer to that, to the good representative. Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, who's doing a wonderful job in the chair today, and is my desk mate. Folks, the problem with this and the frustrating thing with this is the NEPA process is one thing, and the FLTMA process is one thing. But when you start in that process, they put a time frame and a schedule out there that they are required to follow. And in this situation with the mine up in the northeast part of the country, the Forest Service has totally abandoned their commitment to keeping that schedule. That's why, and what this resolution is saying, listen, you guys made a commitment to this industry. Now, get your butt in gear and keep your obligation to the whole process, because it's very difficult for this company to move forward to make any plans. In fact, they made plans based on this time schedule that the Forest Service had, and the federal agency had, and because they're not keeping that schedule, they're having to lay people off. And so it just over and over again becomes very difficult to make plans based on those schedules when they won't keep the schedule. And we're saying, you know, listen, we have to keep schedules. You have to keep schedules. This is a message to them saying we are expecting you to govern that portion of the federal regulation in our state to meet the needs of the state and to meet the criteria that you established when you set forth the NEPA process. So it's a good resolution. I'm not a big fan of resolutions, whether on horses or whether on mines, but this is one that we probably need to get behind and support. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just some more follow-up. The mine actually started in the late 40s. It was mined for rare earths. The Chinese, I guess that country across the Pacific's that's about the size of the U.S., they flooded the rare earth market back 10, 15 years ago. That mine had to shut down at that time. They were non-competitive. And prices the last 10 years went up dramatically. That's when there has been exploration all over the world looking for more of these deposits. We found one here in Wyoming, and it will go into production if they can make a profit at it. It's that simple. But there's other deposits that have been found in Canada. I know of one over in Nebraska that's quite good also. The one in that state on the West Coast, it's also back in production. So, yeah, we've got to get on the ball here and get it in production. We do tax these types of commodities. We don't tax a lot of things in Wyoming, but this is one thing we do tax. So if anyone happens to be worried about revenue streams in Wyoming, this is the way to enhance them. But again, the difficulties you've heard with that certain federal agency, it is not unique to this project. Every project I know of in the West that is on that agency's land ran into the same problem where they are not abiding by NEPA and FLTMA and getting things done in a timely fashion. So what's this resolution do? Not a lot. I guess it makes us feel better, but maybe it helps a little bit.
Representative Burkhardt.
Madam Chairman, seeing no one else at the podium, I call for a question.
Question being called. All those are in favor of Representative Burkhardt's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Joint Resolution 7 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. House Joint Resolution 7 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 172. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 172 from Representative Kasperic, an act relating to motor vehicles and placards for vehicles driven by persons with disabilities, authorizing certification of disability by nurse practitioners, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred House Bill 172, Disability Placard Designation, respectfully reports sitting back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Kennedy, Eklund, Laux, Reeder, Walters, and Dave Swanitzer, signed by Representative Dave Swanitzer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Swanitzer?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 172 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And ladies and gentlemen, the Standing Committee Amendment simply changed the two words that they are adding into the bill, and we changed the name nurse practitioner, and we inserted advanced practice registered nurse. And that was based on our fine staff here and talking also to the department that handles in this. So with that, I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for the explanation on the bill. I will turn it over to Representative Kasparik.
Representative Kasparik.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a bill with a small change that can have a big impact. The only change on the bill is adding advanced practice nurse, a registered nurse, to the list of physicians and physician's assistants that can sign an application for a disability placard to allow patients who have difficulty in walking to and from the grocery store, a retail business, the ability to park in a handicapped place. Currently, we have about 700 nurse practitioners or advanced practice nurses in Wyoming who hang a shingle and provide care for thousands of our people in Wyoming. This just allows them to continue caring for their patient and helps to decrease costs for those consumers who would have to pay to have a physician sign this placard, this application for a placard for them. So with that, I'll stand for any questions or call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Kasparik's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 172 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 172 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative Blake.
Madam Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Yes.
In the North Gallery, I want to introduce two of the hardest working women in Sweetwater County. They manage our two senior centers in the city of Green River and Rock Springs. And that would be Janine Cox with the Young at Heart Senior Center, Rock Springs, and Beth Whitman, Golden Hour Senior Center, Green River. Please welcome them to the House.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 198. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 198 from Representative Harshman, an act relating to compulsory attendance, modifying mandatory attendance requirements as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, to Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred House Bill 198, Education, Compulsory Attendance, respectfully reports the same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Hunt, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Summers, and Throne. Those who voted no, Representatives Freeman, Yeagy, and Pipirinen, signed by Representative Patton, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Patton?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 198 do pass, and yield the floor to the prime sponsor.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, if you could look in your tray, there's actually a three-pager. It's pretty recent, so it should be towards the top. It says fact sheet. It's from our LSO. Should be pretty recent. You'll notice also there's a thick handout there. It's House Bill 1, but I'm not here to talk to you about that today. And that should be on the website shortly as well. Okay, if you have the fact sheet, I just want to, it's a pretty short bill, but I'll just tell you, historically, bills like these have really been losers. And folks have tried to, I don't know, change the compulsory attendance for kindergartners. And the fact is that, I think over 95% of our kids go to kindergarten. So that bill's a bill in search of a problem. And but I think on the other end of this, I think is where the real issue is. And so I want to talk to you about that today, and I hope we can have a good discussion about this. But on the fact sheet, I just asked LSO to just look at some ages for minors for various activities. You can see alcohol consumption 21, compulsory attendance is 16. It's been 16 actually since 1923,
Originally, when our state was founded, it was 14, and it was moved to 16 in 1923. Driver's license, a full driver's license at 17, 16 and a half if you've had driver's ed. Military, you can join the military at 18 or 17 with parental consent. R-rated movie is 17. And then there's another rating on movies that no one under 18, the NC-17. I remember a few years ago in this body, we passed legislation on tanning beds. You have to be 18 to go to a tanning salon, unless your parents are there with you or consent. Also in this body, I remember a few years ago, we passed a tattoo body piercing. You have to be 18 unless accompanied by an adult. You can see tobacco and voting is at 18. So members, then, if you'd flip to page 2 of that handout, I just want a couple definitions. I ran this right out of the statutes, and you can see in 21.4.101 the definitions under Article 1 on duties of the Board of Education. It's compulsory attendance, and it talks about Romanet 1 as unexcused, Romanet 2 habitual truant, but the ones I circled are in the bill, and that's why I wanted to draw your attention to them. Romanet 3 is a private school, and then the definition for a private school, any non-public elementary, secondary, private, and basic academic educational program for children may include parochial, church, religious, or home-based. And then I underline parochial and home-based in the statute. Okay, so that's the definition of a private school, because you'll see that used in the bill. The third page of that handout, members, if you could flip to that third page, really have two charts there. I want to talk about the one to the right of your handout. It's a small spreadsheet. I think it only has 12 cells. It shows the years in schools. And Wyoming is a little bit unique because we specify 9 years of school, but we also were one of two states that say, or completion of a certain grade. Okay, so years in school, Wyoming is 9. There's 8 states like us. 10, you can see, and so on. So the national average is 10.8 on compulsory attendance. Then if you look to the left, these are dropout rates. Now, you hear a lot of talk about graduation rates, and you'd think they would both add up to 100%. They don't, and they're just measured differently. This dropout rate is measured the same across the United States, and it's basically students who start in 9th grade and then who do not somehow make it to 10th grade, or who are in 10th grade and are not present in 11th grade and so on. And really, then they look a little closer at it. Did they graduate? Did they transfer? Move to another country? Or are they out because of an illness? So you can see the dropout rates from high to low. And then beside that is compulsory age requirement. I don't know that there's any link to this. I think it's just more information. You can see Alaska, Michigan, you know, compulsory age is 16. New Mexico's 18, more than what this bill. And they're below Wyoming. You can see Wyoming there at 16. And then you go clear to the bottom where the states have the lowest dropout rates. New Hampshire is 18, but New Jersey is 16 like us. So I don't know that there's any correlation, frankly, but I want to just talk to you and have this conversation. And I think, so if you'd turn to your bill, members, and really the bill is on page 2, and it's really just a couple words. And so if you look on page 2, line 1, that's existing language in statute, September 15th of any year. And if attending a private school who has not yet attained his 16th birthday, and remember the definition of private school, parochial, homeschool, religious school, etc., and or completed the 10th grade. And then new language comes in. Or if attending a public school who has not yet attained his 17th birthday or completed the 11th grade. So this exempts the private schools, and I think that's really where the pushback comes from, because, well, first of all, I think all of us parents, I have 4 kids, I think all of us parents, we're absolutely our kids' number one and best teacher. If we're not, then there's something wrong. And so, you know, and I coach football. I've had, in the last 2 years, 3 all-state football players who were homeschool kids. I mean, so those kids come and they're, so it's not anything to do with private school, public school. I think folks who choose to educate their kids at home, I celebrate that and would support folks in any way possible. Same with private, other private choices, parochial or church school. But I think if folks choose to enroll their kids in public school, and I think we should try to somehow do the best we can and take that charge seriously. And so I bring this to you this year. Frankly, I didn't have really any intention, but I had a student, and really two, but one in particular just kind of struck me wrong. He was a good kid. I mean, he had good grades, pretty good attendance. Everything was good, just a normal kid, had a part-time job. And then he, turned 16, and he quit coming to school. And so then, obviously, you go through all the, we call them graduation status reviews in our school. So you call the parents, you call everybody, you get everybody in. Can't really get everybody there, but he does show up, and he just said, yeah, I'm just going to work. And it's, you know, so you try to go through the whole process of, you know, educating them and all that thing. And really, it was just that thing that the future is about this far away for a 16-year-old. And I think we all remember those days. And all that we know about brain development, and a lot of things can change. I've been around young kids my whole adult life, and it's amazing. The difference between a 16-year-old and a 16-and-a-half-year-old and a 17-year-old. We've recognized that with driver's license. I mean, we have. We know that. I think, you see a young freshman at 14, 15, you never say never because they change so dramatically. And we all have stories like that of our own children and many of us, in fact, who are on this floor today. But I think some of the best testimony was given by a school administrator here in this county. Said, if you can get them just a little farther down the tunnel, then you can start seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And I thought that described it perfectly. Because I think all of us, if we had just a little bit more time, we'd have probably done things a little differently if we made those decisions at 16. So I just think it's important to have this discussion. I don't know if this is a panacea. I think a kid who's determined to not go to school and their parent, they're not going to go to school. I don't think the long arm of the law is going to make them. In any way, but I think for those a dozen kids, maybe a couple dozen kids around the state that start thinking when they're 15, boy, I can't wait till I'm 16 and I'm done with school. And if they had that thing, they'd say, well, I can't wait till I'm 17. And then things happen and you develop, you grow up a little bit, you make better decisions. And so that's really the point of the bill. And so I'd stand for any questions, Madam Chairman.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would oppose this bill basically because I just don't I think the system we've got now works fine. I mean, do we really need another the government putting another requirement on families? I mean, we've got a system now that we've heard testimony it's at most a couple dozen kids in the state. I just don't know that it's necessary to change our law over that, and I would encourage the body to resist this bill.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also am concerned with this and would suggest that we do not pass this. Hearing the good coach and appropriations chair does have the very best concern for kids, and he's seen some kids, and that's why he's bringing this. I also have had quite a bit of experience with kids and seeing. I had one that I brought up in committee that in 10th grade teaching biology just didn't click, didn't want to be there, and he finally decided he wasn't going to come. And, of course, I tried to encourage him, but he left. He wasn't out a full year, came back the next year, and he kind of, as said, grown up. And he ended up graduating and living there in our valley with family, and just some changes are there in kids. I also am concerned with the parents. I've had quite a few parents call. In fact, I've kept a little tally. I'm up into the 25s that have said, please don't do this, for whatever reason. And some of them are have been brought out that graduation or age doesn't really make a lot of difference in graduation. It can be positive or negative. And the superintendents that I'm representing are both a little bit skeptical of this and wanted me not to support this. So I bring those facts up. I did get a Supreme Court case that said so long as a parent adequately cares for his or her children, there will normally be no reason for the state to inject itself into the private realm of family to further question the ability of parents to best make these decisions. And that, again, goes both ways on the scale. But I think I'm lined up to say, let's just keep it as it is and let the parents and the kids work together. And I hope, as educators, everybody works to keep the kids in there as best they can. We want them to be successful and graduate. Thank you.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm in favor of this bill. I haven't always been, having sat on education for many years. We talk about these issues regularly, and one of the things that we talk about is our high school graduation rate. And it's not that I want this bill to up our high school graduation rate. As the good coach pointed out, the long arm of the law isn't going to do that. However, I think this bill actually not only provides opportunities for kids, but gives us some marching orders. We're going to have to do better in high school. And I also think that we're going to need to think differently about our children in terms of their sex and gender. The rates for boys dropping out of school is far greater than girls. But the reality for boys and girls is quite different, and that's what we'll need to address. Boys in this state have opportunities to leave high school, for example, and get good paying jobs, right? If they're not doing well in school and someone offers them a $38,000 or $45,000 a year job driving a truck, they're willing, interested to get out and do that and then buy themselves a fancy old truck. And let's face it, we want our boys who are struggling in school to figure out, right, how to keep them there, how to get them to read, how to get them to write and do the arithmetic that will help them 20 years down the line, not just tomorrow when they can go out and drive a truck for $35,000 a year. And then we've got our girls who drop out. For our girls who drop out, their economic stability over a lifetime is horrific. Right, the average wage for an adult woman in Wyoming who doesn't have a high school diploma is $10,000 a year. Right, that is not economic self-sufficiency, and that doesn't in any way support a family. And so I think we need to do better in our schools. So this simply isn't something telling kind of, you know, parents and kids how to behave, but it's telling us that we need to do a bit better in our schools for these kids who are dropping out and think in new and creative ways. So I'm on and in favor of this bill, but I recognize as well that it will obligate us to do more and think differently.
Representative Summers.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I stand on in support of this bill. My districts, in fact, do support this bill. And I realize that it's, you know, not the silver bullet, but if we can encourage a few more students to get to 11th grade and maybe they do see the light at the end of the tunnel and finish school, I think it would be worth it.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not sure where I am on the bill. I do have a question about whether there have been concerns raised about forcing students to stay in school if they tend to be more disruptive or if there are problems associated with a student that just doesn't want to be there. That's something that I don't think we've addressed here, but I'm curious about. The other thing, you get quite an education here on this floor with our educational process, and this is a little side note, the kindergarten isn't a compulsory deal, and as a result of that, when we limited down classroom sizes to 16-1, they were kind of left out of that thing. I just wanted the House floor to know, in case you didn't know, your kindergarten classes can be as big as as the district wants them to be, and possibly it's something we should address in the future. But I'd appreciate some help on this bill and any information you could give on students that just don't want to be there.
Representative Edwards.
Madam Chairwoman, thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak. I am on and against this bill that's coming before us. When I was in high school, my dad was on the school board. Him and I had the same discussion on this that we're having today. And I had in my class those who didn't want to be there. They were made to be in that class. As you know, it's a younger age. And they disrupted the class where those who wanted to learn had a hard time learning because those that didn't want to be there were made to stay there. So they kept the class from being focused on what was at hand. It's better to let those who want to learn to be in the class and not everybody that is of that age to stay. The higher you raise that limit, the harder it's going to be on those who really want to learn. And I think that's where it needs to stay, is right where it is today. Thank you.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Rising to support the bill and the one additional year. I think one of the greatest things that we can encourage our children with is an educational opportunity. And in having said that, doesn't mean that because they got a job offer at the coal mine and they can make $25 an hour for a short period of time, that is the life opportunity that they should be encouraged to go to. Not rising in favor of such a bill as this is to be acknowledged, and it was acknowledged in our committee, that it's not a silver bullet. It's not an answer to our dropout rate. But it does give a tool for the aggressive schools up in my area that actually wanted it to go to 18 instead of 17. Their argument for that was that fourth year is very, very critically important to preparing themselves for their future education. So the compromise that the good author has brought for us at our 17th birthday at least gives an emphasis and gives the family support to their young folks to say, hey, at least one more, you can go one more year and get your diploma, and that will be, say, a significant achievement in your life and your future.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In committee, I made sort of a flippant comment that the cutoff of 16 was archaic and had probably been in place since I was 16, which would be quite a few years. So I contacted staff and I asked them to do the research. The age has been 16 since the 20s. Can't find my notes. I'm pretty sure it's 1923. Before that, it was 14. Lots of things have changed since 1923, mainly that if you don't have a high school diploma, you can't get a good job. And so when we leave the age at 16, we are sending the wrong message to our students. And I think after 80, 90, 92 years, math was never my subject. 92 years, that perhaps we should consider increasing it to 17. I also learned from my local school district that we had 21 16-year-olds drop out in Laramie County 1 last year. And wouldn't it be better if those kids were still in school?
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Chairwoman. I'm not going to speak for or against this. I have strong feelings on it. But one of the things that I've heard today is that we are going to have to do more than this. This is a tool to get kids to complete. And I have stood at these podiums and said we need more tools for our schools over and over and over again. So to get up and say don't give another tool would be borderline hypocritical of me to do that. But one of the things that if this bill goes forward or if it doesn't go forward, one of the things that we definitely have to do is find more ways to invite students that have dropped out back into the educational community to where that we can give them the skills to where that they can have a fulfilling life and that we have the workforce that we need in Wyoming. So I'll let you, your own conscience, kind of decide what is practical and what isn't. Think of law enforcement. Think of schools. Think about classrooms with people who don't want to be in there. But and think of the benefits of keeping a kid in school and where they're done. But there is no magic bullet.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Harshman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question really about and really concerned the last speaker and the good speaker from Laramie County about, well, what about the kid who just doesn't want to be there? And I think Representative from Campbell talked about disrupting the rest of the kids. And I think, you know, education has changed so much. And there are so many alternative programs. I think all of our communities have alternative schools that are smaller and kind of different schedules and allow kids to, create their complete credits and different time frames and allows them to work and do all those things. And so we've really done the whole gamut. Really, the legislature has been behind really funding that through our model with extended day and summer school and all those alternative type things. So there's a lot of those opportunities. I don't think this bill really, you know, those kids are, they're on a different level of triage and different services. I'm thinking about the kid I had this fall, and really, he just quit coming because he could. Wasn't a disruption, didn't hate school, didn't. But his future was about this far. That's all he saw. And I think, you know, we're sitting here in the state, just under 50% of our babies are born Medicaid babies, over half in my county. And the number one predictor of success in school, you can say what you want, but the number one predictor, the only thing that correlates across countries, across school districts, is the socioeconomic status of their parents. And every year with my students, I talk about this value of education. I show the latest data, put it up on a big screen, and you've all seen it. You go from high school dropout, high school graduate, it goes from about $17,000 a year, all of a sudden, boom, like 27 with a high school diploma. 1 year of college, jumps up to 30,000. 2 years, college graduate, average wage is 47,000. Master's degree, doctorate degree. And so education is the key to lift kids out of poverty. It's the key. It's been the promise, really, of our great democracy. That's what public education's for, is the survival of our democracy. And I think when we say, hey, you can just walk away. And again, I'm not talking about the kids who need triage, who are seriously damaged. There's some damaged kids. But you're dooming those. They're dooming themselves, really, to just low economic status. And it's tough. And that's what really changes families. It does. I mean, you get a good job, and you're able to provide, and then your next generation is better. But if you walk away at 16, you're going to make under $20,000 a year. And that's just the way it is. So I'm not, you know, it's all over. But I think for this kid that I had this fall, absolutely, he'd still be in school. He just used his thing because he could. So, Madam Chair, I appreciate everybody's conversation. And so I don't think it's a panacea. I think this little bill, but I think education is a huge, huge piece of the panacea and really building strong families and that economic base. So, thank you. Unless we have further debate, I'll...
Are you ready for the question?
I think...
Oh, excuse me. Representative Summers.
Madam Chairman, I apologize. I know it's kind of late in the discussion. It took me a minute to dig this out. But there was a study conducted that looked at the jobs in Wyoming in 2018 and beyond, and what the composition of those jobs would be. And I'll grant you it's just a study, but I want to read you what that is. 7% of the jobs in 2018 and beyond will be for high school dropouts, 7%. 32% for high school graduates, 26% for some college, 13% for an associate's degree, 16% for a bachelor's, and 6% for a graduate degree. Thank you.
Now, are you ready for the question? Okay. Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 198 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
House Bill 198 passes the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for your consideration is House Bill 147. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 147 from Representative Summers, an act relating to coordination of public education statewide, establishing the Wyoming Council for Education as specified, prescribing membership, specifying membership reimbursement, granting powers and imposing duties, requiring reporting, providing personnel, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred House Bill 147, Wyoming Council for Education, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Paxton, Somers, and Throne. Those who voted no, Representative Jaggi, Patton, and Piperinen, signed by Representative Patton. Chairman, further reviewed by your committee number 2, Appropriations, who respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Harshman, Moniz, and Stubson. 2 no votes, Representatives Greer and Nicholas, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Patton?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so at the recommendation that House Bill Number 147 do pass. I will yield the floor for both the amendments. There's 2 pages of amendments, but they fit into the bill with the explanation of the bill, and yield the floor to the prime sponsor.
You have heard the motion on the standing. Are you, Representative Summers?
Madam Chairman, thank you. And Madam Chairman, I would move standing committee amendment number 1. And Madam Chairman, if it's your pleasure, I would just kind of bring that amendment into the bill as I discuss the bill, and then at the end you can help me remember to call for question on the standing committee amendment first, and there'll be another amendment as well, and a committee of the whole amendment. So, ladies and gentlemen of the 63rd, I bring you House Bill 147. House Bill 147 creates the Wyoming Council for Education. And first of all, I'm going to be right up front with you. There's been 2 attempts at councils like this in the past, and they've both failed. And there's different reasons why they've failed, and I've talked to various members of these councils, and they all say it's a good idea. And I think the fact they failed even further reiterates the fact that we need something like this. This bill is designed to increase the communication and coordination in K-12 education. This bill is intended to smooth the transition for students during their educational careers. This bill is not about increasing the bureaucracy of K-12 education, but is about bridging those bureaucracies. The most important takeaway from the consultant's report on education governance was no educational governance structure ensures educational excellence, and no structure guarantees educational mediocrity. It is not what structure you have, but how we implement the structure we have. We have a good education system in Wyoming, but we do need to improve the communication and coordination between the silos of K-12 education, which include the governor's office, the state board, the superintendent of public instruction, and most importantly, the districts. There is inherent tension between these silos of education, some good, some bad, but we need a forum that allows all of them in the room at the same time, especially districts. Excuse me. I have to relay a story from an education committee meeting this summer, a story that really defined the moment when I felt this bill was important. We were at a break at an education committee meeting, and I was walking towards two important members of silos of education, and they were whispering to each other. And as I got closer and when I passed them, they quit whispering. And that's the problem with education in Wyoming, is we're doing too much whispering about each other and to each other, and not enough bringing important issues out into the open and having those discussions. This is about having those discussions. I visited with all the educational entities involved before I ever drafted this bill. I have received tremendous support for this concept and from these entities then and now. I even talked to members of the failed councils, and they remain supportive of this effort. I have placed the responsibility for this council in the hands of the executive director of the Community College Commission because I wanted to remove the chairmanship from the silos to help decrease tensions, and because this individual is highly respected. Let me walk you through the bill. Take a little drink. In this bill, you see on page 1 that we create section 2125101 and 2125102. If you go to page 2 of the bill, 2125101 deals with the membership of the council. And the membership will include the legislators, governor, superintendent of public instruction, state board, University of Wyoming, one administrator or faculty member from the University of Wyoming's College of Education. One of those, and this was brought to me before I got the bill completed, this idea. One of those transitions we have is from the college with a graduated teacher back into K-12. And we just want to make sure that transition's right, and we've looked at all of those things. And then the executive director of the Wyoming Community College Commission, the director of the Department of Workforce Services, an employee appointed by the governor from either health, Department of Health, Family Services, or Education, who specializes in early childhood education, a member of the Wyoming School Boards Association, and then on line 19, 11, Romanette 11, one certified teacher employed by a Wyoming school district appointed by the state superintendent of public instruction. Here starts the amendments. And this goes on. If you look on quickly on page 4 on Romanette 12, we bring in a school or district administrator. And during the discussions we had in committee, we thought it was important that there be somebody from the elementary side of things, the elementary education, and somebody from the secondary side. And so what we did in this amendment, on page 3, line 19, and then again on page 4, line 1, was basically said we want the teacher to be from the grade school side of things, and we want the administrator to be from the secondary side of things. That amendment in that portion is slightly goofed up, and I'm going to bring a committee of a whole amendment to clarify that. So I would just urge you, when we get to this time, support the standing committee amendment. I'll bring the committee of the whole amendment and explain in detail why we didn't quite get to what we were intending. Going on to we have another amendment on page 4, line 7. Let's see, line 8. So in Romanette 13, what we're doing is bringing in two Wyoming citizens who are parents. And when I originally crafted the bill, I said appointed by the governor. In talking to some folks, they felt it would be nice to have that appointed by the state superintendent. So that's that piece of the amendment. And then after the period on line 9, we've decided in committee that there were a couple of other important individuals that we may need to have on this commission. And so we've created a Romanette 14. which would be one member of business, and Romanette 15, one community college instructor. And then it goes on to say in subsection B, any member appointed to the council who is not an employee of a governmental subdivision shall receive a per diem. It's kind of the standard thing for when you bring the public into things. And then we go on in 2125-102 into that, create that section of statutes, which is the duties of this council. And in Part A, the council shall identify a common vision for Wyoming's public education system. And then in line three, we're going to insert in this portion in the amendment, in the standing committee amendment, on lines 28 through 21, after education, it'll go comma, including defining roles and responsibilities of agencies and entities involved with Wyoming's public education system. And the reason this was discussed in the interim, even this was brought up in the public by an individual, you know, oftentimes we don't understand who has clear roles in K-12 education. And even in the interim, in one of, well, it was our first meeting, the committee talked about, well, are there some roles that we can, that the state now has that we can give back to the district? So I think it's important in this whole visioning process to take a look at these issues. And then in Romanette B, the council shall identify mechanisms and recommendations to improve the following educational transitions. The consultant's report that we received in the interim identified the transition from secondary to post-secondary education as the greatest gap in Wyoming education. And so I think it's important that we take a look at these transitions and see how we can make them more seamless. And this was also part of what was brought to me, and I support. Part C on page 6, the council shall identify any modifications to Wyoming's governance structure that may increase efficiency and improve the transitions. You know, and it may not take legislation. It may be in rule and reg of one of the departments. But, you know, are there things that we can do to tweak the structure or recommendations that can be made that everybody can agree to that would improve the system? I think that's the proper way to go about it. Subsection D, the council shall not meet less than 2 times a year, and I envision it'll meet more than that. And then on line 11 on page 6 is the last part of the standing committee amendment, and it would insert lines 33 through 34, and it says beginning September 1st, 2017, and each year thereafter, the report required under this subsection may include recommendations to modify the duties and responsibilities assigned to the council, including but not limited to recommendations to modify the composition of the council or the chairmanship. I thought after 2 years of running this council, one, you know, is it still worthwhile? Two, they've run it long enough to know if their membership's correct. And three, is the chair sitting in the right place? And I just think it's important to take a look at those things as you go along with any kind of committee. And then still on page 6, part F, subcommittees can be created to conduct business, subsection G. Upon approval of the majority of the council members, the executive director of the Community College Commission may designate a facilitator to assist the council in identifying a common vision and to aid in discussion of the work. Actually, the good university down the way has a facilitator like this. This is not something they'll have to go out and hire, but it's available if needed. You know, section 2 is your money. $35,000 is kind of the boilerplate for a task force like this to pay for people coming to the meetings. The amendment by the appropriations will come in subsection B, and section 3 is $5,000 just to pay for legislative members and LSO stuff. So you know during the course of the deal. So really, that's my discussion. I really believe that we need this council. I've looked at this for 2 years and wondered how we could, you know, we are doing, I believe in our educational system and I believe in our structure. I just think that we need to have better communication. And I'm going to relay one other story. One of the guys that kind of threw this into my mind is in that first meeting, a county commissioner that you met here from the northeast part of the state, who was then a school board member, he stood up and said he thought it was a really good idea to create a task force to look at some of this stuff. And he cited an example, which is a board that he and I serve on that deals with brucellosis, and how that board has worked effectively. And so have we solved the issue of brucellosis in Wyoming? No. Will it ever be solved? Probably not. But the one thing we have done is create relationships amongst those entities that have to work towards that, towards the functioning of around that disease. And relationships are the most important thing we can build, and trust is the most important thing we can build. And that's my hope for this council. Thank you. And the standing committee amendment, I would ask the question on that standing committee amendment.
Question having been called, all those in favor of standing committee number one, amendment number one, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We are back. We have another amendment from the Appropriations Standing Committee. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a member on the floor telling me to bootleg or call student body right. I don't think that'd be appropriate, Madam Chair. If you would turn to page 8 of the bill, standing committee amendment number 2. I thought I'd try this mic back here, see how the back of everybody's head looks. Thank you, Madam Chair. While everybody's getting there, on paragraph B, starting on line 14, your Appropriations Committee supported the bill, and listening to all the testimony, we changed it on line 16 to one at-will position, so not a permanent position. We deleted all the language about how it's classified as Executive Management 2 or the equivalent down through line 18. So it's an at-will employee, and then on line 20, we reduced the appropriation for this employee to $70,000, and we the funding source from general fund to school foundation program. And that's the amendment. We just thought that this would be a time limited to get this council up and running. We support the goals of the council. And so if any questions, I'd call for the questions on the standing committee memo.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Standing Committee Amendment number 2 has been adopted. We are back on the, we will move the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, Representative Summers.
Madam Chairman, thank you. And I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 and ask for your favorable support. So this goes back to that page 3, line 19. And basically what we're saying, and so if you look at it, it says in the first standing committee amendment to this line, delete. And then delete serving grades, kindergarten through 5. And then delete serving grades, kindergarten through 5. Insert on page 3, line 20, after district, insert to teach any grade, kindergarten, grade 5, any grade... teach any grade, kindergarten through grade 5. And we just wanted to clarify that it would be a teacher that was teaching any of those grades and not a teacher that was specifically teaching grade kindergarten through 5. So just a clarification. Page 4, line 1, kind of the same thing, as we just want to say, you know, that it's going to be a district administrator. I think it's, let me read it. I finally got this like right as I was coming here. So page four, line one in the first standing committee amendment to this line, delete serving grades 6 through 12, delete or district. Page 4, line 1, after district, insert to serve any combination of grades 6 through 12. Delete superintendent. So it's just saying basically a school administrator who to serve any combination of grades 6 through 12, including but not limited to a principal or a vice principal. So we just wanted to make sure that we had a teacher that was teaching in those lower grades and an administrator that was administrating in the higher grades, just to have that variation on the council. If there are no questions on the standing committee amendment, I would ask for the question. And the committee of the whole, sorry.
Thank you. All those in favor of the committee of the whole amendment number 1, please say aye. All those opposed, please say no. The standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I'm having some trouble getting my arms around this. What the purpose of this is, I don't see how it. Is there an interface with the Board of Education, or is this to? Does the Board of Education have a charge or an assignment of duties that doesn't include any of these things that appear on page 3 and page 4? I guess where I'm having my problem, I look at what they're going to be doing, and the main part of what they're going to be doing is coming up with a common vision, which I thought we already had. And then under B, it's making transitions. And I never, after all the years I served on the Education Committee, I never knew we had problems of making transitions from kindergarten to elementary school, or from elementary school to middle school or junior high school. I guess if the sponsor could describe for me some specific scenarios of, number 1, where we are having trouble with these transitions, and number 2, how this collection of people that's on this board, or council, I guess it is, how this collection of people would be uniquely qualified to do that above and beyond the Board of Education or the Department of Education and so forth. I guess I just can't see the use of this and what kind of outcomes we're going to experience.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. There's, in my opinion and in my observation, there is a lot of problems with transition. I taught in a traditional high school for 9 years, and before that an alternative school. I was a department chairman. And basically, and my job now is that I go to different school districts and promote the idea to have their students take college classes before they graduate from high school. In each one of the transitions that I'm most familiar with is students coming from the middle school or the junior high up to the high school. As all my times as a department head, I think we only had one meeting between the junior high and the high school. And from my dealings with other people from around the state, that's pretty common. I thought it would be pretty easy in my new job to get people to interface to where the kids are taking college classes, and that's been a challenge as well. And I've been in that job for 4 years, and I'm just now starting to see some real progress in that. There is silos in education. The The different levels do not talk to each other very much. The post secondary and the secondary, as mentioned before, was the biggest gap that we have. And there is no one that's addressing this. As we were in committee the other day, I was the one who said we should put a community college instructor on that task force because, frankly, they think different than high school teachers and community college administrators. So the question was said, who should appoint that? Well, the logical person would be the executive director of the community college commission. And somebody said state school board or the state superintendent, and I immediately agreed to that, and I heard somebody in the audience say, well, that's stupid. And I thought, no, it isn't, because by having that college instructor be picked by the state superintendent will force those two entities to get together and say, what are we looking for? We have to start thinking outside of the box, and we have to start getting all the major elements of our education system to talk to each other. And to leave status quo, I can almost guarantee that isn't going to happen. If you have an advocate for change to say, we have to start to talk, we have some ideas that we should look at, we have a chance. If we do nothing, I don't see those silos breaking down and more opportunities for students. Thank you.
Representative Summers.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I'd like to ask or answer the rest of that question. In fact, the State Board of Education had started or was considering to start down the path of a visioning process. And when I talked to them, before I brought this bill, I brought the idea to all of them, the state board, the superintendent, to everybody in these groups of silos. And I said, what do you think? And they all agreed that this was a good concept. You know, that's why I've tweaked it as we've gone. A lot of those tweaks are based upon input from these silos. But they all recognize this is important. And I just think that I really believe it's important that districts are part of that process. So that was the reason there is actually, that was going to be a considered process by the state board. And some of these other ideas have came from other areas. I think in the future, I've seen two or three things this year come to this session that could have been sent to a council like this to evaluate its merits and bring a recommendation back to the education committee. So I hope that answered that question.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Really appreciate the bringer of this. I think the representative has worked a lot of hours and talked to a lot of people. And when we were in committee, I asked, you know, why are we bringing this? And exactly what he told you, to increase our communication and coordination. I kind of view this a little bit differently. I kind of see it as we are creating another silo. We are creating another agency. I started counting and had 15, and then I got corrected. We're up to 20 people. We had a Supreme Court ruling that said the superintendent was responsible for the education. We have 150 people, a $1.8 billion budget, and here we are creating another agency, and I'll get to that. But on the first page, I've got the people that talked to us. We had a business person said yes. The education representative said yes. The school board said yes. The superintendent said yes. The community colleges said yes. The university said yes. One no, by a parent that stood up and said, wow, what are we doing here? As I went through the bill with the committee and the sponsor, on page 6, we are getting another person or this committee, and then we can establish subcommittees on the top of page 7. We have an appropriation. We have on page 8 a person that has been changed from a full-time to an at-will. And then we just have a bit of money going into this whole thing. And some of the things we're trying to do is, if you look on page 5, I'm not sure on the top of page 5, the council shall identify a common goal. And I think I'm having the same question that the good chairman brought up of revenue, that what is the common vision? Is it standards? Is it, and then we're looking at the Wyoming publication or Wyoming education system for preschool through post-secondary, and we're going to identify the goals and make identify the mechanism and recommendations to approve the following educational transitions. I think we have an agency that's set up for this, to take care of this. Another concern I had was we get a lot of consultants, and we are going to hire consultants to bring us information, and the consultants will give us this report. I just kind of think we have the organization set up, and we just need to get it done with what we have without creating another big agency and silo, is what we're calling these. So we have a bunch of silos, and now we're making another silo so we can all communicate better with all of the committees or silos. So I think we're going in the wrong direction here, folks. I'd encourage us not to do this. Thank you.
Representative Pieperinen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I too would like to express my appreciation for the good representative here, the work and time he's put in it. He's one of the smartest people that I know when it comes to educational matters. But I shared an experience that happened to me when I first came to Wyoming, trying to put together one of these strategic groups to come up with the strategic plan. Everything was going well. We had input from all kinds of stakeholders, people from business, people from religion. You name the stakeholder, they were around the table, probably close to 20 or 30 people. We put together what we thought was a great plan. And lo and behold, a year later, there was a change in leadership in our district, and that plan was shelved, never to be seen again. I'm concerned something similar might happen with this. It's already happened twice. This is the people's house, and I'd like to just share a couple remarks from some of the people who are in education. One wrote to me and said, I know this is somewhat a drop in the bucket, budget-wise, but I'm failing to understand why the coordination of public education statewide should cost an additional $170,000 a year. Thankful for the Second Amendment. Just my impression, but my ears are still ringing with the twangs of budget deficit fears in Wyoming and state revenues still on the decline with the current and falling oil and gas prices. Another one, a board member simply said no. Another educator said, I'm concerned about this attempt to grow government. To me, it seems like the state already has the infrastructure in place to handle all these issues using the current government structure. Another one said, Seems like a lot of people for our committee council to get things done. There seems to be another layer of government and expense. The duties seem to span several agencies, including the state school board and the state superintendent. With my limited understanding, I am opposed. Then I had one other one who was interested in getting on the council so he could travel. I'm concerned. It's just like deja vu all over again, what I experienced 22 years ago when I came to this great state, and I see this happening again. We need to remember that we are keepers of the people's purse.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's difficult to speak against a plan that's so well motivated. So very clearly with a high objective. But if you noticed, there were some of us, including me, that did not support this from the committee. My principal purpose in my vote was to say that it's not the time for this kind of an effort. We don't really understand what our collective expectation of education is. At one point publicly, I talked about a seamless educational commitment for the state of Wyoming. Seamless meaning preschool, K through 12, post-secondary, community colleges, and the University of Wyoming. That is our public commitment that we support. My thought was, and remains, that something like this may be what we want to do given the changes that have already taken place. Try to calm people down and look at what our expectations might realistically be within our reach. I am not one that's going to talk about the past in a critical sense. I'm going to talk about the past that we need to get ourselves together and explain to the people and be with the people as to what their expectations are and what they expect us to be. So I believe that our legislature, concurrent with the State Department of Education, the state superintendent, let's give her a chance. Let's not make a presumption that we all of a sudden are going to run some kind of a test on top of her when she hasn't even had an opportunity. Let's give her a chance. Take meetings across the state as the Joint Interim Committee of Education is equipped to do. It should do it. It should calm the educational atmosphere, and we can do that by being present, not by sending messages, not by getting an expert, not getting a consultant to tell them what we expect, but rather be there in their community and have meetings with them and talk about early education. Hardly an answer is firm on that one all by itself. Kindergarten, middle grades, middle school, high schools, we have some excellent ones. We have some that are not quite as good as perhaps we would like the standard to be. We know it's not uniform. Do we have a tolerance for that disparity? Do we have an understanding of that disparity? I think it's our obligation to go out there and find out and work with them, not tell them. We need to appreciate what is working. Let's support quality growth, quality educational opportunity, and I think we can do that without this measure.
Chairman
on
Harshman.
And against.
Excuse me. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On and for the bill, and I appreciate the bringer's work. He's worked countless hours on it. I think back to last year in the budget and when a member here on the floor made an amendment out of frustration to really make the community colleges and University of Wyoming communicate together and come back with a report. because what we found out with that report was that kids who transfer from our community colleges, it takes them 5 years to get a degree, and kids who start at the university, just 4 years on average. And so it's just a matter of communication. They got together. They've already articulated those courses. They've fixed the problems. They're going to transfer, and that was something we had to do. And it's always amazed me in this state, we spend, you know, state money, a little over $2 billion a year on K through 16. You add everything else, it's probably $2.5 billion. And it's, nobody talks to anybody. Nobody knows. I mean, you graduate as a teacher from the University of Wyoming, you're not a certified teacher yet. Now you got to go to another state agency and jump through more hoops and maybe be told to take more classes before you can become a certified teacher. It makes no sense. And in all states where we have this population of 500,000 people, I mean, most states can't even get together because, you know, they're totally out of the box. I mean, they're so big. But here we are in Wyoming where everybody knows everybody or at least knows somebody from your town, and we can't get together and talk about it, something that's the largest expenditure in our budget. It just makes no sense to me. I think the idea is worth trying, getting people together. And I think it's a new day in education in this state. I think we've had such negativity the last 4, 5, 6 years. And frankly, a lot of that's come from this floor. And our education systems, like the rest of our society, you keep beating on things and people lose trust, whether it's cops or teachers or whatever. And so I think with a new, just every kind of a new start, and I just, so I appreciate the timing, I appreciate the bringer, and I think it's just an opportunity for folks to get around, and how do we spend this $2.5 billion, and can we do a better job bringing everybody together? We're still in the box, and now's the time to do it. So on and support. Thank you.
Representative Summers.
Madam Chairman, I want to thank the body for the good debate. I appreciate the comments of the good chair of education, and if the time is not now, when is the time? We've had these silos, this friction for most of my sister's career of teaching, 30 years of education. So, and districts never seem to have a seat at the table. I wanted to bring districts to have a seat at the table. So, once again, you know, there is no consultant in this document, in this bill. I don't like the consultants we've been hiring. What I said was a facilitator, and that UW has a facilitator if a facilitator is needed. That's not a consultant. It's not bringing in another out-of-state interest. So I would urge you to support this. I do believe we need that communication. Thank you.
I would entertain a motion for the question. Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Summers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 147 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
House Bill 147 fails. Oh, division has been called pursuant to H.R. 6-6B. The bill having failed, we're going to have the ayes stand. All those opposed, please stand. House Bill 147 has failed. The next bill for our consideration. Oh, I'm sorry, roll call. Allen. Baker. Baker. Baldwin. Barlow. Berger. Blackburn. Blake. Burkhart. Bird. Bird excused. Campbell. Kennedy. Clem. Connolly. Dayton. Edmonds. Edwards. Eklund. Esquivel. Freeman. Gay. Greer. Halverson. Harshman. Harvey. Hunt. Yagi. Jennings. Kasparic. Kirkbride. Croker. Crone. Larson Lloyd. Larson Dan. Lindholm. Lockhart. Bauks. Madden. McKim. Miller. Moniz. Nicholas. Northrup. Patton. Paxton. Pelkey. Petroff. Pipirinen. Pinnell. Reeder. Schwartz. Summers. Steinmetz. Stubson. Throne. Walters. Wilson. Winters. Swanitzer Dan. Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Hunt, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 28 aye, 31 no, 1 excused. Having failed a roll call vote, House Bill 147 has failed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 215. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 215 from Representative Speaker Brown, an act relating to community juvenile services boards, authorizing counties to form community juvenile service boards as administrative boards and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 215, Community Juvenile Services Board's creation, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Kennedy, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Somers, Walters, 2 no votes, Representative Edmonds and Gay, and 1 excuse, Representative Byrd, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that the committee of the whole rises to report to do so with a recommendation that I can't read it on here. Here we go. House Bill 215. Do pass, and I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the good legislator from River Town and ask him for. Wait a minute. I'm going to turn this thing over to the Speaker of the House to explain.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a cleanup bill. I'm going to take a fast run through it and see if I can average out the debate time for the last bill. We have community juvenile services boards. We've had them for some time. There's an anomaly in the statute. The statutes say that a community services board can be formed by forming a joint powers board. It also says you can form an advisory committee to be a community juvenile services board. Then we have another statute that says that funding for community juvenile services boards can be provided if there's an agreement between agencies. DFS took that and ran with it and wrote a rule that said if you form a community juvenile services board by agreement, that's okay, you can do that and you can get funding for it. But there's a hole in the statutes there, and I really question whether that rule should have been made or not. So this fixes it and says you can have community. Well, and so 13 communities in the state have done that in reliance on the DFS rule, but it's technically not correct. And so what this does is just add a little bit of language in the statute that says community juvenile services boards can be formed as joint powers boards, or they can be formed by agreement between entities. Now, by not being a joint powers board, they don't have to have a separate staff, they're not a separate governmental entity, and they don't have to have separate bookkeeping. The two agencies that form the agreement can form that agreement and control the funding. In order to make sure that the agreements would contain the elements that they ought to contain, we wrote this amendment to say if you do it by agreement instead of by forming a joint powers board, you still have to put all the elements in that are required to form a joint powers board. You have to put those in your agreement. Such things as who are the parties, what's the percentage, how is it controlled, what's the voting, how is it terminated if they choose to terminate it, and how would the funds be divided on termination. So it's just really a cleanup. As I say, 13 communities have done it. I think 3 or 4 have done it by joint powers boards. I think the agreement is a more attractive way to do it. It'll qualify for the funding. It technically makes them in conformance with the statutes, which maybe now they aren't. And I think it forms a good basis for more than one governmental entity to go together with another and form a community juvenile services board. So with that, Madam Chairman, I'd stand for questions. And if not, I call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 215 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
House Bill 215 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 182. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 182 from Representative Connolly. An act relating to the Personal Opportunity with Employment Responsibilities Program, amending asset reporting requirements, amending allowable asset limitations, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman of Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred House Bill 182, Public Assistance Eligibility, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Kennedy, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Summers, Walters, 2 no votes, Representative Edmonds and Gay, 1 excused, Representative Byrd, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 0182 do pass, and we'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the good legislator from the capital city and urge your listening.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Mr. Chairman. I bring you House Bill 182, which updates, modifies, and conforms our statutes regarding TANF and power. TANF is our temporary assistance for needy families. Power is personal opportunities with employment responsibilities. These are federal programs that are administered by our Department of Family Services, which is charged more broadly, not simply with administering these programs, but with helping our citizens get off of TANF and power through economic self-sufficiency. To do so, they see the need for a change in 3 different ways. And I see the good chairman up there because there's a standing committee amendment. Yep. That, would you like me to incorporate the standing committee amendment into my presentation?
Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, it was my error to not mention the standing committee amendment, and I urge your support of it. It's a very simple one that cleaned up a couple of things as we worked the bill. So if there's no discussion on that, I'd urge your aye vote.
All those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. A Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman. And so now getting into the specifics of the bill. There are three elements that get changed statutorily with this bill. And so starting on page 2, line 5, right now a recipient is required to notify the department immediately of any change in circumstances. There's a change to 10 calendar days. This is simply a conforming amendment with other programs within the department, and also it's reasonable. So if there's any new birth in the family, a death in the family, et cetera, that the recipient's obligated to report within 10 days. On page 2, lines 10 through 12, there's a change in the number of vehicles that an individual can have, and this is where we see the change with the Standing Committee Amendment. The proposed language had vehicles not included in the counts of assets, where there had previously been one. The Standing Committee Amendment now allows for up to 2 vehicles for an individual. And then line 3 changes the amount in savings, basically, that an individual can have and still be eligible, you know, up to $5,000. I think these are good and important changes. As we talked about in the committee, the reality is that in Wyoming we don't have public transportation, or we have very limited public transportation. Kind of families have more than one vehicle, and it makes sense to do so. I mean, there's ranch trucks. There was an illustration of the need for a snow vehicle in order to kind of move a worker from her home out to the street. We have more than one vehicle in our households. It makes sense to acknowledge that for those individuals who are on TANF and need to get to work so that they can get off TANF. And then to up the amount of money in a savings account. And I gave the illustration of right before I came to session, I had a household emergency, and like many people in Wyoming, I own my home. Most people in Wyoming own their homes. We have a low number of rental units, so most people own their homes, including those people who are on TANF and PAR. And I had a sewage backup. Yep, I know, gross and disgusting, but I needed to deal with it right away. And what it meant was the ability to be able to call a plumber and have it taken care of, and that savings account was able to help do that. And so in order to have economic self-sufficiency, in order to have families be able to kind of care for themselves and not rely on the state, we need to have our statutes reflect the reality. And so these are three changes that were kind of suggested by the department, and I stand for any questions.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think I'm okay with these changes. I'm just curious about the reasoning for the deletion of language on page 2, line 14 and 15, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. So if you could just give me the committee's reasoning for deleting that language.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative. Good question. That's just a conforming amendment. There is another bill that is going through on the Senate side that takes care of what's called SNAP, which is food stamps, and this does nothing to change that program.
Is there any further discussion? With that, I would entertain. Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Representative Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 182 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
House Bill 182 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for your consideration is House Bill 177. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 177 from Representative Burkhart, an act relating to the collection of debts due the state or other governmental entities, providing a fee for collection costs when the state or governmental entity employs a collection agency to recover debts, amending existing statutes and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 177, Collection Costs for Debts Owed to the State, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who vote aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, and Stevenson. One no vote, Representative Nicholas, signed by Representative Moniz, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harshman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 177 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendments, and I'd turn the explanation over to the good representative from Carbon, and he'll talk about the standing committee amendment. Thank you.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to dispose of the standing committee amendment number one. Before we get started, page 5, lines 6 and 7, and that is delete all the new language, and that is a request from the agency so that the funds are properly handled. So you can keep that in mind as we go through the bill. Ladies and gentlemen, this bill provides one small but important change in how debts owed to the state are collected. And that's right, there are debts owed to the state. The state cannot forgive a debt. If you don't collect it, it stays on the books forever, and we have quite a few of those. This bill does not cover any personal debt. It's only commercial debt owed to the state, and these would be things such as sales tax that isn't paid, unemployment compensation taxes that are not paid, OSHA fines, other fines and penalties, and that sort of thing. And I know some of you are looking strangely, but there are people who don't remit their sales tax, who have businesses and don't send it to the state. The state currently uses collection agencies to go for these uncollectible debts, as they call them. And the state does exercise its authority, tries to work out payment agreements, but they get to the point on some of these that they just are not collectible by the normal means. So the state already uses collection agencies. What this bill does is allows the costs of collection to be added over and above the cost of the debt. So normally what happens right now is if someone owes the state $100,000 and the state's collection agency can get $90,000, they take a share of that to pay the debt. So the state doesn't get the full amount of money. This allows that if they're owed $100,000, the collection agency can add on top of that the cost of collection, which could be up to 20%, and the bill does limit it to 20%. Currently, when they go out for a collection agency, it's done on a bid basis, and currently they're paying about 12%. So, now, with some of the debts, currently it is estimated that the state is owed somewhere maybe north of $30 million in these back debts, and in a time of reduced budgets, reduced revenue to the state, that adds up. Think of your favorite project, and we all have them, and what that would mean to the project. Additionally, this bill allows the collection by our safety department through Workforce Services to collect the OSHA fines. When there's a safety violation, right now they have no mechanism to collect those fines. In fact, that agency that handles unemployment compensation can't go after companies who don't pay their debt in any way without this bill because they get federal money, and the federal rules require that they can't use any of the collected money to pay for collections. So they just sit there and ask people if they would pay out of the kindness of their heart. On the sales tax issue, think about this. You go and you buy your automobile, and I'm not picking on automobile dealers. This is just an example. It could be the hardware store, the, you know, furniture store, any number of places, and you pay your sales tax. Then they don't remit it. Depending on what county you live in, they could be getting a 6% profit, pure profit, by not paying their sales tax. And if you look in our Constitution, it's not legal to put people into debtors' prisons anymore. so they can sit there and never pay them. I understand there's one person who owes $4 million in unpaid sales tax that has told the state, you'll never get it out of me. So all this bill does, when you read through it, and we can go through it, but most of the changes merely say, add the words, and collection fees. And it talks about collection agencies, and that's what it changes, is that single item to allow the addition of collection fees to be added to the debt owed to the state. And again, no medical debt, no personal debt, nothing like this. This is commercial debt owed to the state. And that's a pretty brief description of the bill and what it does. And the Standing Committee Amendment on page 5 was mainly for the agency to enable them to correctly get the debt and put it in the correct accounts rather than having it go somewhere else was the reason for it. So with that, I will stand for questions.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. A question. You said the OSHA fines. You mentioned, I wrote down the things you said, and the OSHA fines, is that fines? I mean, that's a federal program, so how does OSHA fines fit into them, or is the OSHA, well, just help me understand that, please. Oh, there is a
state OSHA. Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Wyoming is a state-funded state for those safety programs, and the fines that are paid in Wyoming do not go to the federal government. They actually go to the school accounts. They're divided up. They come into the state, and then the state divides them up as we do with all the appropriations for schools so that the schools get those. So these very large fines that you hear once in a while issued, if they don't pay those, that's money that the schools are out because all of that money comes to the state is divvied back up to the counties, and that's what happens to those fines and costs. And that additionally, go ahead.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was wondering if the good bringer of the bill would elucidate whether this would apply to severance tax, ad valorem tax, and other taxes that don't seem to be collectible at this time. If these other government agencies, including the state of Wyoming, would be able to use collections agencies for that purpose. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The question I have has to do with fines that might be in dispute or tax debts that might be in dispute. At what point does the collection process kick in and consequently the collection fees?
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. To the first question on those taxes and that, yes, this could be used for those, allows the state to, and again, they already use collection agencies for what they classify as uncollectible debt. They also use the Attorney General's office, but those people tend to be work very hard at times. So they could, again, use the collection agency. They already do. This just adds the fees. On in dispute, these aren't things that they say, gee, and frankly, I have a business, so I pay sales tax. Don, you forgot to remit your taxes last month, and we're going to send a collection agency after you. These are things they work through and have a long process, and it's probably more than a year until they go after these.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I have real concerns about turning over basically a governmental duty to a private business and a private business that's not necessarily known for how they do their job. It seems like a privatization issue that I think is inappropriate. I guess I would also ask the bringer why, if we're going to do this, environmental penalties are not included from 3511-102 et seq. Thank you.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. actually, the state already has turned these over to private entities. They already use collection services that are contracted to the state. They already hire these people. Like I said, it's like any contract with the state. They put it out for bid. Lowest bidder wins. I think they're currently in the third year of a three-year contract with the current companies. And as for the environmental fines, I asked the agencies to submit the ones who needed it and wanted to be able to do this to let me know, and I heard nothing from our wonderful environmental department. So
we have a standing committee amendment on the floor. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of standing committee number one, amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Standing committee amendment number one has passed. We're back on the bill. Is there any further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 177 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill 177 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 121. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 121 from Representative Dan Larson, an act relating to administration of government, specifying limitations on delegates to an Article 5 convention, providing definitions and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, in Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 121, Constitutional Convention Limitations, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pinnell, and Winters. Two no votes, Representative Escobel and Belke, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 121 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I'll let the Representative Larson explain the bill and move the amendment after he explains it into the bill.
Representative Larson.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I bring this bill to the Committee of the Whole as protection from a runaway convention of the states. A similar bill is being brought forward by many of the states where a convention of the states is being considered. Nationally, this bill is referred to as the Delegate Limitation Act. A very similar bill was brought to this body last year during the budget session. Last year, the bill was recommended as due pass from Committee Number 9, but it was never brought to the floor in the Committee of the Whole. After being elected this past November, I was contacted by my fellow representative and co-sponsor of this bill. We decided to work with a national task force working on a balanced budget amendment. In working with them, we were encouraged to bring up these two very important bills, Joint Resolution Number 4, which is passed and is on to the other chamber, and this bill I am discussing now. The plan was to bring this bill, the Delegate Limitation Act, up first to educate, discuss, and calm legislators' concerns on a runaway convention of the states. That is the meat of the bill, the control of a delegate at a convention of the states. Now I will explain the bill. You were told there is a standing committee amendment number one with this bill, and I would like to incorporate it as I explain the bill. On page one, we have a first change from the amendment. It is before line one. And we are deleting constitutional and inserting Article 5, and then we'll read Article 5, Convention Limitations. This bill is an act relating to administration of government, specifying limitations on delegates to an Article 5 convention, providing definitions, and providing for an effective date. In the first section, we create Wyoming Statute 920-101 and 920-101.
9-20-102. So I'll go on down. So in 9-20-101, we have definitions, and that's where we start our next change to the bill. On page 2, line 8, we will delete, after convention, we insert a semicolon, delete the balance of the line. Line 9, we're going to delete it entirely. It will then read, Article 5 application means a joint resolution passed by the state legislature of Wyoming on the same subject or containing the same proposed amendment text as 33 other states requiring Congress to call an Article 5 convention. In the next section, in Romanet 2, we define Article 5 convention. It means a convention for proposing amendments as expressly provided in Article 5 of the Constitution of the United States. Romanet 3 defines delegate or alternate. It means a person selected by the state legislature of Wyoming or any other method provided by law to represent the state of Wyoming at an Article 5 convention. Romanet 4 defines legislative instructions. This means instructions given by the state legislature to delegates and alternates before and during an Article 5 convention. On the next page, we have our next change with the amendment. It is on page 3, line 2. After outside the, insert permitted, and then delete of, and insert contained in. So then the definition of unauthorized amendment means a proposed amendment that is outside the permitted subject area matter contained in the Article 5 application or contrary to legislative instructions. The next section is 9-20-102. It's limitations of authority for delegates to the Article 5 convention. In Romanet A, this part states what delegate cannot consider or approve an unauthorized amendment. The next, we have our next change with the amendment. This is on page 3, line 13. Delete delegate, casting A, and after vote, insert made. And after, on line 14, after B, insert null and void. Any delegate making this vote shall be. So then this reads, in Romanet B, any vote made in violation of subsection A of this section shall be null and void. Any delegate making this vote shall be immediately recalled by an official or executive branch committee authorized by a resolution of the legislature and replaced by an alternate. In Part C, this requires an oath or affirmation by the delegate or alternate. And I'm going to go ahead and read the oath. It says, I do solemnly swear or affirm that to the best of my abilities, I will, as a delegate or alternate to an Article 5 convention, uphold the Constitution and laws of the United States of America and Wyoming. I will not vote to allow consideration of or to approve any unauthorized amendment proposed for ratification to the Constitution of the United States of America. I understand and accept any penalties that may be imposed on me by Wyoming law for violating this oath. Our next change to the bill is on page 4, lines 10 and 11 are delete entirely. On line 12, we delete 1,000 or both, and we insert felony punishable by imprisonment for not more than 5 years, a fine of not more than $10,000 or both. So then the D will then read, any delegate who violates the oath contained in subsection C of this section shall be guilty of a felony punishable by imprisonment for not more than 5 years, a fine of not more than $10,000 or both. Additionally, any delegate who violates the oath contained in subsection C of this section shall be ineligible to serve as a delegate, and any certification of the delegate shall be null and void. The next section, E, it states that the Secretary of State shall certify the Wyoming delegates to the Article 5 Convention. In Section F, it states that the Secretary of State will promulgate rules and regulations for replacement of the delegate and will immediately certify the replacement. Section G states that the Secretary of State shall notify the Article 5 Convention and any delegate involved of the automatic revocation of that delegate certification should that delegate violate his pledge to act only within the limits of the authority granted by the State of Wyoming. And then Section H, the provisions of this section shall be enforced by the Attorney General. A Wyoming citizen may file an action to enforce the requirements of this article and shall be entitled to reasonable attorney's fees if successful. We have our final change in the bill. On page 6, lines 1 through 3, we're deleting entirely. This is not needed because it. This is what has always happened at a convention of the states. They've had an equal vote, is just one vote per state. The next section, section 2, the bill amends statute 22-20-209, procedure when Congress directs manner of holding convention, procedure for an Article 5 convention. It inserts in parentheses A, and then it also inserts B, and this is if an Article 5 convention is called as provided in Wyoming Statute 920-102, the provisions of this chapter are inoperative to the extent that they conflict with a convention conducted in accordance with Wyoming Statute 9-20-102. And Section 3 just states that this is effective immediately. That ends my explanation of the bill. And also including the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, I move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and ask if there's any discussion.
Question having been called, all those in...
Chair.
Oh. Yes, Ms. Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On and against the amendment, and mostly because of line 4... or page 4, line 12, about the delegate being fined $10,000 and the prison sentence and from it going from a misdemeanor to a felony. Because if you look on page 3, Romanette 5, that if they're discussing anything outside the subject matter of the article, then you can bet someone from another state may interpret something that one of our delegates says to be something outside that subject matter, and then that fine would be imposed upon our delegate. And I just think it's too steep of a fine, and that was my main objection to the bill and the amendment.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I rise in support, actually, of the amendment, and to be honest, I'm the one that brought this, and it's for a very clear reason. It's not as though one can't discuss things out of a subject matter. One cannot vote on those things outside of a subject matter. And I do believe that when it comes to something this important, to have just a simple slap on the wrist and have them come back here with a little misdemeanor and a small fine is not something that is going to be profitable. In this particular case, I believe making it a felony punishable by imprisonment for not more than 5 years or a fine of not more than $10,000 is the appropriate way to go. And so by raising that standard, I think it actually ensures a sense of safety that this bill is trying to convey. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I really wasn't planning to talk today. I thought I'd take the day off and just kick back, but I felt obliged to spring up. I'm a little concerned with page 6 And I wonder, you know, we've been here a lot of hours, and maybe we're not really alert here, but brothers and sisters, I think maybe you need to help me on page 6. Starting on line 10, I mean, our entire discussion we had last week about this convention, against which I admit I voted against the conventions and all that, out of the fear of the runaway situation, and we were firmly told that Congress had no say in it, and it would go as it always went, and therefore we shouldn't worry in the slightest. And now I see, on starting on line 10, that if Congress, line 11, prescribes the manner in which the convention shall be constituted, then line 12, the provisions of this chapter are inoperative, line 18, and we're directed to act in accordance therewith and in obedience thereto. And I kind of wonder if one of these conventions is actually held and we send our delegate and they get there and find out that Congress has decided to actually do something else and set it up in some other way and do other things. What is this about obedience? I kind of more prefer come home straight away. So maybe you could explain that to me.
Representative Larson.
Boy, that's a tough one. Madam Chairman, I'm not sure if I can explain that. I think I'm going to look for a little help, maybe from the back.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Actually, this is a wonderful question that has been raised. In reality, operating within the boundaries of the Constitution in Article 5, all that Congress is allowed to do, one, is call, I'll just read it for you, Congress, whenever two-thirds of House shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states. There's two things they can do. The first thing is, one, they shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution. When ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states or by convention in three-fourths mode thereof, and here's the second part, the only second thing they can do, as the one or other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress. So one, they can call, which means they do get to set the time and place, or two, they also have the opportunity to either send it to this body or to a convention within the state that is called specifically for approving of the proposed amendments to the convention. So all this is attempting to do, and I'll be honest with you, this language right here comes from something different than what I initially was working on. Last year, the good former speaker of this House had worked on a bill that was very sound, and so some of this language may have slid through and may need to be amended later on. But all is talking about the provisions of this chapter are inoperative, and the convention shall be constituted and shall operate as the resolution or act of Congress directs. I believe that was basically referring to some previous language that already the amendment has stricken regarding time and place, and so I believe that's what that is. That is specifically regarding.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to echo what the representative directly to my left had just stated, Congress is only allowed to set a place and time. Now, granted, they can send a piece of paper saying maybe this would be a good idea, but it's up to the states to draft said amendment. It's up to the states to do the work. Place and time, that's what these delegates have to follow, and that's what this section speaks to under 22-20-209. Thank you.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a question for discussion on page 6, lines 1 through 3. The amendment, as I understand it, says delete entirely. I don't believe that that's one and serves our interests. But I would appreciate an explanation of that. Each state should have one vote, and I don't believe we want to change that.
Representative Larson.
In all the other
conventions that have convened, it has always been by the states voting, and their state voting individually. And there has been more than 30 of these conventions convened, and they have always been just one state, one vote. So we took that out just knowing or realizing that that's always been, and we thought that might be an issue if other states didn't put it in theirs that way, that we were trying to conform to other states.
Representative Piperinen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I had a question on page 4, section D, regarding the penalty levied here. If the delegate goes rogue and violates the direction of the legislature, is their vote binding, notwithstanding our state's intent?
Representative Winters.
Madam Chairman, I can answer that directly. With the amendment that you just saw, we made sure to insert the words null and void, which would be backwards. It would mean that that vote has been instantly nullified and that delegate will be recalled and replaced with their alternate. So that's a direct answer to that question.
Representative Larson. The question has been called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. Could we have a standing vote, please? If you are in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. The Standing Committee Amendment has failed. Oh, passed. Excuse me. We are now back on the bill. Question being called on the bill. All those in favor of Representative Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 121 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 121 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Madam Representative Berger.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, don't worry. I'm not closing down shop yet. I just need a privilege of the floor. I wanted to take a moment to introduce some interns that we have in the North Gallery. They informed me that it's much more exciting when they get to hear us do second and third reading. But I'd like to introduce Anna Gillum, Ann Lynham, Taylor Wentland, and Casey Terrell. Please stand up. They do a lot of work for us. And with that, we're going to continue, I hope, till 5 o'clock. So let's go, folks.
Okay, the next bill for our consideration is House Bill 181. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 181 from Representative Harshman, an act relating to speed limits, amending penalties for violations of speed limits on the interstate highways as specified, providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 181, speeding penalties in 80 mile per hour zone, respectfully reports saying back to the House that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Campbell, Eklund, Laux, Reeder, and Walters. Those who voted no, Representatives Blake, Kennedy, and Dave Wanitzer, signed by Representative Dave Wanitzer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Wanitzer?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 181 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I'd like to turn over the explanation to the fine chairman from the center of the state, Chairman Harshman.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members, if you would look in your tray, you have a recently arrived handout. It says House Bill 181 on the top in bold. It's a one-pager. You know, as most of our bills are brought to us from constituents, and this one I actually learned about in our appropriations hearings with our transportation department, and really didn't realize it. And so as I voted against the 80-mile-an-hour speed limit last year, and but this was brought to my attention last in December in our hearings, and I thought, you know, it's pretty confusing. So the more I dug into it, it needed some clarity, and I think I can explain it in this handout, and then I walk you through the bill. So, members, if there's a couple things, there's several types of speed limits, and what I've found out are what we call standard highway limits, and currently those are the 65-mile-an-hour speed zone and the 75-mile-an-hour speed zone. And then there are superintendent speed zones, and those are where you see those variable signs on I-80. Okay, the superintendent can adjust those. And then also to what I didn't know are the permanent signs going up I-25 and across I-90. That's a speed limit 80 miles per hour. And so so what this bill tries to do is bring some consistency, because right now it's kind of a disincentive on our penalties. And so if you'd look at the first in the middle of the page, so here's why House Bill 181 is necessary. In the 80-mile-per-hour superintendent zone, and all 80-mile-per-hour areas are classified as superintendent zones, the following fines apply. Okay, so if you're going 5 miles, 1 to 5 miles out an hour over, it's $55. And then if you're 6 miles per hour over at 86, it's $70. If you're a truck, it's $370. And 15 miles per hour, if you're driving 95, plus, if you're driving 95 miles an hour, it's 120. Now, if you look at the standard highway limit, the following fines apply. This, at 5 miles per hour over, we have in statute, there's only one place where we specify speed fines, because the rest of them are set by the Supreme Court. And that is on our highway speed limits, $5 per mile an hour over, up to five. And that's the $25. And then 6 miles per hour over, it jumps to $95. And then 15 miles per hour over, you can see if you were driving 90 in a standard highway limit, if we had that law, it'd be 160. So you can see that in the current superintendent zone, the faster you drive, the less the penalty. So really, if you are going to be a speeder now, you want to drive 86. Because it's only $15 more, and because if you drive 81, it's 55. And so my issue, I guess, and why this came to my attention was really, and I think about people who put big tires on their truck, or people that, you know, we go up and down hills in Wyoming. I mean, even on cruise control at 79 or 80, you're going to go 81 or 82. And so you go 82 miles an hour, you get fined $55. And you might as well drive 86 and really speed and only have a 15-mile-an-hour penalty after that. And so it really makes no sense. We disincentivize the fines the faster you drive. And particularly also with trucks. The same applies to trucks. And so this bill went through committee, I think, There's a lot of different parts to it. As you'll see, there's about five pieces in the statute. The department testified on it. I got an email again today from the department. Appreciates this approach to it. It brings consistency on our highways. And so that's really the reason to bring the bill. And then, members, if you want to flip through the bill, on page 2 is where it really, their maximum speed limits set in our statute. And you can see the on line 6 on page 2, Romanette 3, that's the 75 mile an hour. The ones you can't see are Romanette 2 is 30, residential, and Romanette 1 is 20 mile per hour in school zones. That's not pulled into this. And then you can see Romanette 4 is not in there, and then 5 has been repealed. So a new paragraph, Romanette 6, establishes a standard highway limit at 80 miles per hour. And that's the new paragraph. And then as you go farther down, it just takes in the existing language that we currently do on our highway limits on line 21 of page 2. And that continues over through line 6 of page 3. And that's those fines that are under 5 miles per hour over the speed limit. And then on line 8 on page 3, Romanette 3, that starts the over 5 miles per hour conversation. You get court costs, the fines jump up, all those things that currently do not happen. And then, members, on page 4, paragraph G talks about truck fines, that extra $300 for 6 miles per hour over. Those remain the same. And then also truck fines on page 4 on line 15 for 5 miles per hour over. So I would stand for any questions. I actually did track down the fines that are set by the Supreme Court. I'm going to email that to the whole body just for everybody's knowledge on that, and you can print those out. But I'd stand for any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was a no vote in committee. I have since realized the error of my ways and urge you, I vote on this bill. Thank you.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm wondering if the sponsor can tell us, in reference to the handout that says HB 181 on it, after all this is sorted out, what are the new numbers? Okay? I assume what you got here on this handout is the way it exists now, and the purpose you have in bringing this bill is to make it uniform, and I'm just wondering which numbers on here are now going to change.
Representative Harshman.
Madam Chair, and thank you. I appreciate it. I wasn't clear on that. So in the middle of the page where it says in the 80-mile-per-hour superintendent zone, the following fines apply. So that's the way it currently is now. And then if you go down to the next one in the 65-75, and I put in parentheses 80, if we had passed this bill, the 80 will be a standard highway limit, and then the following fines would apply. And so it makes it consistent on all our highway limits. I wasn't very clear. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for asking that. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I just wanted to clarify some of the talk in the committee. And I definitely appreciate the chairman bringing this bill, because this is a good bill, and these fines need to be uniform, so we're not confused if we're in a superintendent's zone or just a straight zone. But let it be known that we do not want you to be driving 85 or 86. The speed limit is 80, and so we had a lot of discussion there. So even if it's only a minimal fee of a dollar or two, please be aware of the fact that the 80 mile an hour is what the speed limit is. And some of the pushback in the committee was based on when this bill was brought last session. There was that big discussion. Is 80 miles an hour 80 miles an hour, or is it 85? And I don't know that that is totally in play on this bill. I think what's in play on this bill is if you happen to go over, make the fines consistent. And just one other thing on the handout where it says trucks of $370, be aware in this particular case a truck is defined as anything 2,600 or more than 2,600 pounds, and that would include a combination. So if you're one of those fellows that has a truck with a trailer that's rated over 26, that does fall into that category. I didn't want you to be confused. This thing was the big 18-wheeler. So I am in support of the bill, but not in support of any comments that would lure you into going faster than the posted speed limit. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Swanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 181 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 181 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 135. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 135 from Representative Blackburn. An act relating to game and fish, providing for resident lifetime archery licenses, providing for fees, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, in Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 135, Lifetime Archery License, respectfully report same back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Clem, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, Schwartz, and Steinmetz, signed by Representative Petroff, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Petroff?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 135 do pass. And I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and the amendment simply deposits the funds from the lifetime licenses into the same fund where the other lifetime licenses go, which keeps us from spending it all at once. So with that, I will call the question on the amendment.
Question being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Blackburn?
I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to Representative Blackburn.
Madam Chairman and esteemed colleagues of the 63rd, I'll try to keep this under 19 minutes so that Representative Brown will be happy with us. This is really a bill designed for archers, for a lifetime archery permit, which I think is long overdue. Was approached this summer for this. Fishing Game seems pretty happy with it. It does put some more money into their coffers quickly. I don't think there's going to be a lot of outpour for this, but I hope that the young people will take advantage of it. And if there's no questions, I'll stand for the question.
Is there any discussion? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 135 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 135 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 154. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 154 from Representative Kirkbride, an act relating to game and fish, providing for recoupment of fees for complimentary licenses for individuals with disabilities, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman of Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 154, complimentary hunting licenses, persons with disabilities, respectfully report seen back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Clem, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, Schwartz, and Steinmetz. Signed by Representative Petroff, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Petroff?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 154 do pass. And I turn the explanation of the bill over to Representative Kirkbride.
Representative Kirkbride.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This bill melds two concepts. First, there are a small group of hunting licenses that are given away or sold at reduced prices, as prescribed in 23.1705, as seen on page 2 of the bill. Licenses from the chief executive, for instance, or the one-shot antelope hunt, pioneer licenses for various species to name a few. Disabled veterans and youth with life-threatening illnesses are also addressed. Some of these types of licenses may in turn be turned in by the Game and Fish for recoupment from the general fund, such that the Game and Fish is not out of the money for the donated license, and that's described in the 504A Roman numeral 4 article on page 1, line 10. Okay, that's one concept. Park that for a moment, and I'll continue. In Wyoming, there are a small number of nonprofit groups who specialize in providing hunts for hunters with disabilities. A hunt is often a cooperative effort, with the hunter traveling to the area often from out of state and purchasing a license, a landowner providing free access to his property, a motel providing a discounted stay, and the nonprofit providing free food, transportation, and guidance for a few days' worth of inexpensive dream fulfillment that might cost $5,000 to $7,000 if provided at full price. In the list of complimentary licenses are 50 antelope licenses reserved for exclusive distribution by these nonprofit organizations dedicated to providing hunts to individuals with disabilities. But while they are reserved for these special hunts, they still come at a cost. The bill seeks to move these 50 licenses into the list of licenses in 23-1504 that are eligible for recoupment and thus can be provided for free. So again, the licenses are already reserved, but they're not free. This bill puts them in that category of licenses that the Game and Fish can seek recoupment from the general fund for so that they may be distributed for free. Here's a couple questions you might have. I'll anticipate them. Why is there no fiscal note? Well, there wasn't time to produce a fiscal note. Obviously, there is an amount that this may incur, ranging from 50 $33 licenses, which would cost $1,650, up to 50 $272 out-of-state licenses, which could cost $13,600. How many nonprofits do this? Currently, there are 4, and they've already put in their request for this hunting season. They've requested 54 licenses, so they're going to have their own little lottery to work that out. Will this procedure take away opportunities from Wyoming hunters? No, the 50 licenses are above the quotas in existing areas. Out-of-state hunters were already receiving nearly 34,000 out-of-state antelope licenses in 2013, and Wyoming hunters were receiving 25,000 that year. Well, what's the criteria for being disabled? The nonprofits serve as gatekeepers on this, and they distribute the licenses to their clients. What makes the potential recipients unique? Many are on fixed incomes and thus stressed to afford the trip just to get here. The free licenses would be a big help in most instances. So the question before us is, does Wyoming want to become an additional partner in all this by providing for these licenses from the general fund? I urge your support and stand for any questions.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question has to do with the recoupment value. Will it depend on which licenses are donated to residents and which are donated to non-residents, or is there a flat fee?
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Over the last 8 years, when I've seen these deals come in, I always worry about the process in divvying out these free licenses. You know, because somehow I'm feeling that somebody's paying for this. I've heard that when this happens, we have a general fund backfill account, or we backfill it because we say that the Game and Fish shouldn't bear the price or the cost of it. And you know, what really bothers me, and you don't see what the fiscal note is, you know, you would think that if there is a fiscal effect that there would have to be an appropriation. But when we give free stuff away out of the Game and Fish department, it seems like nobody worries about it because, well, it's just Game and Fish revenue, and that way we don't have to get in a special appropriation. We can just shorten up their flow of funds. And somehow, you know, I can't see how how we can pass this if we don't know how much it's going to cost in the short run and the long run. And it's just kind of something that mushrooms every year, kind of like personalized license plates, I guess. It's the same kind of deal.
Representative Laux.
Madam Speaker, I really don't want to follow my sword over this one. I'm the bringer of the bill. It's a noble effort. It really is. But I go by a cliche in my life, there's no free lunches. And with this situation, I think I heard somebody say there's four people out there doing this. What if there's eight next year doing this? And I just, there's 60 of us in the room. I mean, I'll buy a license for somebody else. I'm sure we can take care of that without changing the way it's working right now. Thank you.
Representative Kirkbride.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In response to the question from District 22, they would be reimbursed or recouped according to whether it was an in-state hunter or an out-of-state hunter that received them. So they might be a $33 recoupment or they might be a $272 recoupment or any combination thereof. In response to the question or the comments from the District 40 chairman, the state does a lot of things in the name of tourism that I guess you could consider we're spending money that will come back to us in different ways. In the case of these hunts, I have no doubt if you want to look at them just from a pure business standpoint, the money will come back to somebody in the state. There will be motel rooms bought. There will be food bought. There will be gas purchased and maybe some sweatshirts and maybe some ammunition. So I think it'll come back to us just like a lot of things we do in the realm of tourism come back to us. We do things for people who live beyond our borders that benefit them, but they actually benefit us as well. So a couple of responses.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said the question here, the 50 complimentary antelope licenses. This is a great hunt for these to be on because it's an easier hunt. It's just highly successful. But you did mention the licenses were going to come from a place. In southwest Wyoming, they're totally drawn. There aren't any leftover licenses. So if these were going to come out of those areas, that means people would not get them. I thought I heard you say these were going to be in areas where there were excess licenses, so there would not be residents that are going to not be able to have these licenses. Was that correct? Could you explain that for me?
Representative Kirkbride.
Madam Chairman, the 50 licenses are above the draw. So they are not being taken out of the existing pool of licenses that hunters are receiving licenses from.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that recoupment balance account, and maybe talked about it, it's like $650,000 or some amount in there currently. And that is part of a general fund request from a statute we passed a few years ago. So I think you talked about $13,000 max coming out of that account that has about $650 in it. Thank you.
Representative Kirkbride.
Madam Chairman, thank you. In response to the question from District 59, this program is 4 or 5 years old, and there's been from 2 to 4 of these nonprofits tapping into the licenses in recent years. The limit is set on the number of antelope licenses we'd give away, regardless of how many of the nonprofits were vying for them. It would just, they'd have to work that out as to how many per group got licenses.
Is there any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 154 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 154 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our
Madam Chairwoman, may I have
Representative Edwards.
May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes.
I would like to introduce in the South Gallery my daughter, Mariah Smith, and my grandson, Silas Smith.
Hey!
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 155. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 155 from Representative Kirkbride, an act relating to game and fish, authorizing the holder of a big game hunting license to donate the license to a permanently wheelchair-bound person and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, the Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 155, Wheelchair-Bound Hunter Donated Licenses, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, Schwartz, and Steinmetz, one conflict, Representative Klim, signed by Representative Barlow, Vice Chairman.
Mr. Speaker sends his apologies. you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Petroff?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 155 do pass. I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I'll turn the explanation of the amendment and the bill over to Representative Kirkbride.
Representative Kirkbride.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. First, let's deal with the Standing Committee Amendment, which has two subjects. One, it changes some of the language in the bill to more disability community-friendly language or person-first language. So that's all the paragraphs until you get to the bottom have to deal with that. And at the bottom, we change the enactment clause to an effective immediately should the bill pass so that we could get the show on the road and perhaps have this in effect for this hunting season. So I move the approval of House Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess you'd call this a companion bill to the previous bill, but simpler. In 23.1705, beginning on page 1, line 14, we read that the holder of any valid big game license may surrender said license to the department for reissuance to a veteran with disabilities as established by commission rule and regulation, selected and sponsored by a nonprofit charitable organization providing hunting opportunities for disabled veterans. This bill adds or a permanently wheelchair-bound person into that pool eligible for that type of a donation. In practice, there are currently 14 organizations networking to take advantage of this program. In 2014, 156 licenses were donated, and 111 were reissued, the most donations yet. With enactment, more nonprofits might seek the licenses. But, and this is the important thing in this bill, they typically cultivate their own license donations. And thus, the license pool would probably expand, not become more competitive. There's no effort here to disenfranchise the disabled veterans currently served. So House Bill 155 is an opportunity to offer a few more folks, permanently wheelchair-bound hunters in this case, the opportunity for a one-time Wyoming wildlife experience they'd probably otherwise have missed, at no cost to government at all. I stand for questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 155 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 155 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 157. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 157 from Representative Harshman, an act relating to game and fish, revising the residency requirements for pioneer hunting and fishing licenses as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 157, Pioneer Hunting and Fishing License, respectfully reports sending back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Baldwin, Barlow, Klim, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, Schwartz, and Steinmetz, signed by Representative Petroff, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Petroff?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 157 do pass, and I move the explanation, or I turn the explanation of the bill over to Chairman Harshman.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I got a letter from a constituent, and was born in Laramie, born in the Gem City, and educated there and spent his whole life working here. Moved away for a few years to be near his grandkids, and then has since moved back for the last 5 or 6 years. But what it did, it took him out of the continuously resided. And so there's really a couple parts where we have pioneer licenses. And so the fix for this is on page 2 of your bill. And you can see on paragraph D, the lifetime bird, small game, and fish license. And then on line 4, where the word continuously is struck out. So you still have to be 65 years of age, but you would have had to reside in the state 30 years, but not continuously and immediately preceding application. The second license is on line 13, Romanette I, the $2 resident deer, antelope, wild turkey license, or a $5 elk license for a resident who is 75 years of age and has lived here 50 years of the 75. And again, the words continuously and immediately preceding is struck out. And then for another type of license on Romanette 2, line 21, by rule of the commission for a 70-year-old resident who has lived here for 50 years, and again, continuously on line 2, page 3, and immediately preceding, has been struck out. And so in the department talked about the absolute maximum cost. If every person out there applied for a license that could possibly be in this, and they said the very maximum would be a cost of $64,000 out of the recoupment budget that we talked about. And I think I misspoke, Madam Chair, and said that was $650,000. I think I was correct that it's closer to $870,000 in that, and we'll continue to replenish that account. But I think what happens now, it's just an affidavit you sign. Nobody goes back and checks. There's not a big database. So our seniors go in and sign that this is in fact true. And so that would still continue. I'd stand for any questions. Thank you.
Representative Freeman.
I stand in support of it. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I stand in support of this bill. As we were listening to this in committee, I realized that this is the Kenneth M. Freeman amnesty bill. My father was born in this state, and he, because of the booms and busts that frequent this state, he was forced to leave Wyoming for 16 years, and he came back. He violated the law. He signed an affidavit that it was continuous. But he more than qualified for it if you took just the continuous out. As I look at this bill, I have 3 sons. All 3 of them, because of the economy and because of their jobs, are working out of state. There's no doubt in my mind that 2 will return. So I'm looking forward to them being able to take advantage of this when they return shortly, I hope.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I think you need to look at this on the top of page 2, particularly. D here, that is a big bunch of people. And I can tell you, in my coffee clutch back where I live, There's about four of these characters that sit around my table there, and they've been wanting me to do something like this, and here's why. Here's what they do. You know, you can go to school out down through college in Laramie or somewhere. But anyway, you go to school and you're 22 years old. And then you go to, some other place in the United States. And you retire early at the age 53. And then you come back here. You come back here at 57. And you complete your other 8 years. And here you spent the majority of your life somewhere else. And we're appropriating money to give this fella a license because the numbers add up. This is a really expensive deal. In fact, I don't know how you could come up with a fiscal note on this because you have no idea how many people that falls into. In my town alone, there's hundreds of them that have moved there and are at that 30-year threshold very easily. Even me. And, you know, the other thing you should consider is a constitutional requirement. We're not supposed to be giving free things to people for no apparent reason. We can't say these are needy people or they're not, there's some reason like that for it. There really just isn't any need for us to be picking winners and losers in a deal like this simply because of the arithmetic of 30 years and to a lesser degree. I admit the other ones aren't as significant as far as fiscal impacts, but when you vote for this, you're voting for an appropriation. You may not get that appropriation today, and it makes it easier to pass this since there's no appropriation on the back end, tail of it. But sooner or later, that fund's going to need thousands and thousands of dollars to backfill this giveaway program. Our licenses aren't that high priced anyway. You're talking here birds and small game fishing license. They can't afford to come up with a few bucks every year to do that. I just really would urge you to resist this kind of a giveaway program.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In reviewing the bill, I thought maybe there was going to be a conflict of interest. But there's not. My family bought me a lifetime fishing license and hunting license for $400 or $500. That's been, you know, a couple of weeks ago maybe. How about yours? In looking at this, I have no complaint with it, with one exception, that you can buy a lifetime one and then you can get a lifetime one pursuant to something like this, but neither one provides a conservancy license. So you wake up to the fact that you've got to go up to the Game and Fish office and buy a conservancy license. It just seems to me that we ought to, for 50 years, provide some kind of a deal relative to the conservancy licenses as well as the big game license and the fishing license. And let me add, I do happen to have a lifetime conservancy license as well.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Keep in mind, this is affecting old people like our friends across the chamber. And in any event, this is good for our senior folks here in Wyoming. And keep in mind, these people have invested their lives and livelihood here in Wyoming for the most part. So it's really just taken that continuous language down on and in support of this bill. Thanks.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Considering I now qualify for all of this, can I get a refund on all the ones I already bought?
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Petrov's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 157 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair's in doubt. Could you please stand if you said aye? Please stand if you're opposed. House Bill 157 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 136. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 136 from Representative Madden, an act relating to game and fish, repealing interstate game tag requirements for meat processing plants, requiring meat processing plants to maintain records, providing for inspection of the records as specified, providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, of Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 136, Interstate Game Tag Exemption Meat Processors, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Klim, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petrov, Schwartz, and Steinmetz, signed by Representative Petrov, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Petrov?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 136 do pass. I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I turn the explanation of the bill and the amendment over to Chairman Madden.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is one of those short ones that we can save some time on. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, we have these interstate game tags that are used for transporting, primarily for transporting game out of state when, one possible case is, say, two guys are out hunting together and they both harvest an animal and one guy hauls both of them back on behalf of the other guy. Well, technically, he needs to have an interstate game tag to do him that favor. And there's a multitude of other uses for interstate game tags, and two of them are discussed in this bill after we get the amendments in. I'll weave the amendments in as we go. This was brought to me by a bunch of game processors, all right, packing plant or, blocker plants, that kind of thing. And they said, we use these interstate game tags for a lot of things, but there's two situations that account for about 85% of all of our interstate game tag hassles around here. And one of them is if they ship meat from one processor in Wyoming to another processor in Wyoming for further processing. As an example, there are some guys, there are some lockers that have a talent for making jerky or something, or making, some products, a sausage or whatever. So instead of the one other locker plant doing it also, he knows this guy will custom do it for him. So they have to get an interstate game tag to ship somebody else's meat to this other processor. And then when the processor's done making jerky, he has to get an interstate game tag to send it back to the original processor. Okay, and since we're not talking about, an individual hunter is being involved as that party, that's one of them that they don't think they need, and the department that manages this kind of activity agreed that it isn't an important thing either. The other one is when we have these hunters, or I guess you call them high rollers, because they come out here hunting and they don't want to be bothered hauling the meat back themselves, so they'll instruct the locker plant to ship it on one of these common carriers that I can't mention the name, but you know which one it is. So they'll freeze it and put it in dry ice, and the truck picks it up and hauls it to this guy's house back in, you know, the Lincoln State or somewhere. I mean, it's gone. It gets in the truck, and the last time anybody sees that is when it leaves the locker plant, and the next time somebody sees it is when they get to its destination, which is the same person. So any of these other deals where you're going to be giving some meat away to somebody, or you're going to have do some horse trading or sharing or something like that, you still need an interstate game tag. But these two instances are the only two that this applies to. And the problem that I don't like to do this very often, I don't ever like to do it myself, but my problem was I had two groups that I had to satisfy on it. And then I go back and forth and get one to agree to something, and then the other one wouldn't. And finally, we're going to have the way this will read. Let me read in the Standing Committee Amendment 1, and that will help me explain why that was needed. Did the chairman move this or not? Okay, it's already been moved. So if you look at the Standing Committee Amendment number 1, what we did on page 2, line starting with line 12, what we tried to do is hoghouse too many things in on this paragraph to all, handle it all in one sentence. So we got to saying meat processing plants and person shipping, and when you get all done with it, it's, you know, you don't know who's shipping to who, and it wasn't clear. So we wanted to break that apart, and it looks like the result of that was crossing out and persons shipping any game animal, in part thereto, or receiving any game animal. And then we add in line 16, meat processing plant shipping any game bird or other part to the licensee, or exempt them from the requirements of this interstate tag. So that got us to including both of those instances, meat processing plants, shipping to meat processing plants, and shipping to the house of the residence of the person who actually owned the product, but it's being shipped on the behalf of the hunter on behalf of the hunter by the processing plant. So I'd move that we adopt Standing Committee number 1.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye. Those opposed? Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been passed. We're back on the bill.
Now, Madam Chairman, I've got Committee of the Whole, House number 1. I would move Committee of the Whole number 1 to House Bill 136. And what that does, if you go to 12, remember we crossed out persons on line number 12 on page 2. Delete after F, and we keep deleting until we get to line 16, and then we plug in the correct wording for this, which is shipment or receipt from a meat processing plant to another meat processing plant of any edible portions of big game animals are exempt from the requirements of sections A and B. So when it's all said and done, I passed out the way it actually reads, and I apologize again for the confusion on this, but you would have gotten in your box just real fresh, like the way it will actually read, and I guess that's the explanation of the bill and all there is to it. Okay.
We're on Committee of the whole amendment number one. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Committee of the whole amendment number one has passed. We're back on the bill.
I call a question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 136 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 136 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report. And I want to congratulate you that we've worked 20 bills this afternoon.
I am sorry. I was just down there texting and I thought, no, you're not done. You can sit in the chair right there and wait.
The reading clerk will read the bills.
Mr. Speaker, Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begged to leave report as follows. House Bill 126, amended.
None.
Recommended do pass. House Bill 159, recommended do pass. House Bill 122, recommended do pass. House Bill 180, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 77, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 112, amended, recommended do pass. Representative Berger moved that the House rise and sit again. House Bill 7, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 172, amended, recommended, do pass. House Bill 198, recommended, do pass. House Bill 147, amended. And further amended. And further amended. Following a roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 215, recommended do pass. House Bill 182, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 177, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 121, recommended do pass. House Bill 181, recommended do pass. House Bill 135, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 154, recommended do pass. House and amended as follows. House Bill 155, recommended do pass. House Bill 157, recommended do pass. House Bill 136, amended. And further amended, recommended do pass. And assigned by Representative Steinmetz, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
If you heard the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Steinmetz. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom I referred House Bill 186, Human Trafficking Forfeiture of Property, respectfully reports saying back to the House of the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 187, Marijuana Impact Study, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, Winters, 2 no votes. Representatives Halverson and Croker, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom to refer to House Bill 214, Practice of Law Amendments, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 107, Interstate Medical Licensure Compact, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 118, Education-Community College Commission Budget Request, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stepson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 138, Workers' Compensation for Special Education Teachers, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 152, Industrial Siting Impact Payments, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 193, Veteran Burial Teams, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 209, Transfer of Federal Lands, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, and Stubson, 2 no votes, Representative Connolly and Nicholas, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 225, Highway Patrol Security Duties, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom we referred House Bill 228, Subdivision-Family Exception, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Danswanitzer, 1 excuse, Representative Byrd, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 14, Engrossed, Asset Forfeiture-2, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Miller, Pelkey, Winters, 2 no votes, Representatives Crone and Pinnell, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
Are there any re-referrals? The Chair's not aware of any, but if there are, now would be the time to make them. Committee announcements. Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, will meet at 7:30 in the morning to go over bills, consider the following bills: House Bill 210, House Bill 195, and House Bill 158.
Vice Chairman Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, License Plates, and Military Affairs, We'll meet in room 817 in 10 minutes. Here are the following bills. 219, Decorated Combat Veterans License Plate. House Bill 220, Wyoming Coal License Plate. House Bill 197, Emergency Vehicles, Tow Trucks, and Wreckers. And House Bill 206, Bicycles on Roadways.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to announce that the Quebec One tour that's scheduled for tomorrow morning has been canceled. We will try to reschedule that, and we'll definitely let you know when that happens.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a little ahead of time, but your Agriculture Committee, number 5, will meet on Thursday morning at 7 a.m. Consider two bills, House Bill 203 and House Bill 106, Livestock Brands Reciprocity, Access to Public Lands. We will also, around 8 o'clock, have some FFA students from the Frontier Chapter of East High School preparing for a state competition. They are the Agriculture Issues Team. They will debate on the Western Watershed Trespass Litigation, Clean Water Act, non-point pollution issues. They have had 3 national championships. They will do their presentation after we finish our bills.
Oh. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Wednesday, tomorrow, 10 minutes after adjournment, in room H17, where we will hear House Bill 216, Veterans Skilled Nursing Center, 240, Physician Assistant School, and 246, if time permits, Acupuncture Practice Act.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock to hear House Bill 212, Workers' Compensation Claim Appointment, House Bill 213, County Road Construction Competitive Bidding, House Bill 233, Branch Bank License Expiration, and House Bill 237, Water and Sewer District Contracts. And those of you that have meetings in the Minerals Committee tonight, you can just stay over and save yourself some time traveling.
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet upon adjournment to consider House Bill 91, Restoring Constitutional Governance Acts, and House Bill 131, Change in Party Affiliation.
Committee number 12 will meet Thursday, February the 5th, upon adjournment in room 302 to consider House Bill 205, the Revisers Bill. Are there any more announcements? Committee Chairman, we have a meeting in 302 upon adjournment. Madam Majority Floor Leader, I think that clears the deck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you again, everyone, for working hard today. I also just wanted to remind the body that tomorrow, February 4th, we will start at 9 a.m. You will have a quick one-hour lunch, noon until 1 p.m., and my plan is to work the general file from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. And our general file for tomorrow will be... you should have that emailed to you and handed out, but it will be House Bill 149, 143, 225, 183, 47, 228, 214, 138, 152, 118, 107, 187, 209, 192, 193, House Joint Resolution 10, House Joint Resolution 9, Senate File 14, House Bill 186, House Bill 201, 28, and 142. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until February 4th at 9 a.m.
Committee Chairman, please bring your bill rosters with you so we can discuss the bills you have left in committee. You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're adjourned.